All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world, whenever you're listening to this. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. I'm Dom. I'm here with Colin, as always. And we've got a lot to talk about today in our coverage of probably the most exciting week ever in which nothing actually happened.
Dom, I couldn't be more excited. This was one of the most, you know, so much politicking and scheming and jockeying for position, and it all culminated in one of the most thrilling non-evictions I've ever seen.
Yeah, despite production's efforts to make it as anticlimactic as possible, it still managed to be quite an interesting week. I'm going to get into everything that happened with that in a minute. Before we do that, though, I just want to get on to some scheduling stuff quickly. The Breaking Bad podcast that we promised you last week is in the works. It's going to be coming to you early next week. We had some trouble finding a time to record that, and we think this is going to work better anyway because on Sunday, the fourth episode of the season is going to air, and this is going to be a nice point in which to check in, like halfway through the season.
Yeah, I'm sure the listeners at home are absolutely shocked that we promised something and did not deliver it on time. But
yeah, we don't intend to make this a habit, although we're aware that that's probably past by now.
Yeah, mission accomplished there. Yeah, but I'm very excited, you know, talking about Breaking Bad. Definitely, you know, 8 episodes in part 1 of season 5. And of course, to further talk about the Breaking Bad scheduling, just a reminder, we're going to be talking to the great Stephen Fishback about that after episode 8 of part 1 airs.
Yeah, we might possibly talk about the show again between next week's episode and the podcast we recorded Stephen, but we'll let you know on that as and when we know whether that's going to happen because we haven't decided that yet.
Yeah, and, you know, we prioritize our BB monogram shows very poorly, and I know we're here today to talk about Big Brother. We probably should be spending more time thinking about things like Breaking Bad, but nonetheless, here we are. So, Dom, if you want to get into week 3, let's get into it, and then we're going to talk, of course, after that about the big twists and how we think it's all going to play out. So if we want to back up to where we kind of left off, let's do it.
Yeah, so where we left you last week, we had just finished talking about Shane's replacement nomination of Frank. Talk briefly about whether or not we thought that was a good idea, although I think it's worth getting into that in a bit more detail now. But just to remind you of the background, so Shane had originally nominated Joe and Ashley. It looked like Boogie's plan had worked. It looked like one of Janelle's team was going to go home that week. Obviously, the best case scenario for them would have been Will going home, but Janelle won the coach's comp and gave him the exemption. So it wasn't a perfect outcome, but it seemed to be going pretty smoothly for them. However, a number of events happened which seemed to turn the tide in favour of Janelle's team again. Firstly, Joe somehow managed to save himself.
I don't know that it was Joe saving himself. I think it was just things happening around Joe. I think it was like Colby in Heroes versus Villains. I don't think you can really say he continued to just save himself. Things just changed.
Sure. Well, what happened was Joe gave a heartfelt plea the only way he knew how, i.e. at high volume on his knees. And that seemed to actually hit a chord with Shane, who seemed to seriously reconsider his plan after that happened. But that was part of a wider effort by Janelle to put the full court press on Shane to get him to change his mind. And it seemed like that worked. And the noticeable contrast to be drawn here is between her and Boogie, who it seemed slept through most of the week, wasn't really aware of what was going on, and seemed pretty confident going into Thursday night's quote-unquote eviction that Frank was going to stay, that he had all the votes except one, and that he seems going to remain intact for the foreseeable future. Now, as we know from watching the feeds and from watching the show, that was probably not going to happen. It probably would have been a 3-2 vote in favor of Joe, and Boogie would have been blindsided just like he loves to blindside everybody else.
Yeah, Boogie actually ran good, not getting humiliated on live TV to the fullest extent possible tonight, for in this situation at least. But yeah, you're right. About Boogie, they seemed very confident that Frank had the votes. And to be quite honest, I hated this idea from Janelle. I like it very much from Janelle. But I think if you're Shane, you should understand putting up Frank with the intention of backdooring him is not a great plan for you, because then you stand alone so clearly as the biggest target amongst the new players. And you certainly can't bank on being able to play the next HOH comp.
Yeah, and we've gone into that multiple times in many different ways, so we won't press that point too hard, but it is best repeating it at least once, I think. So Shane evidently disagreed with that logic, decided to put up Frank with the intention of backdooring him, and it seemed like that was going to happen. However, there was a bit of a threat during the week, because Will broke away from Janelle, and at least at one point, about a day or two before the eviction, was seriously considering flipping his vote and voting to keep Frank, forming some kind of sub-alliance with him, finally marking a break with Janelle. There had been a tension between them for a while, but neither of them had actually acted on it because neither of them had had a chance to. And this would have been the first time at which either of them could actually have moved against the other, if only indirectly.
Yeah, and this is, I believe, something we had about Janelle and her gay BFFs not necessarily staying the closest of friends for too long. This was really interesting to me. I thought Will's one of the more interesting players to me, and I don't really know what we want to get into first right now. What I want to talk about, if we don't want to elaborate too much more on why Frank should be going up. Before we get in, what do you want to get into first?
Well, just to explain the format for this episode, towards the end we're going to go over each of the players individually, as we like to do, going over how we think each of them is likely to fare going forward after the events of this week. For now, though, I think it's worth just making some general points about Will, which we've said before, but they continue to be relevant, so let's go over them again. The first point I'd make is that it seems like he is much more of an emotional player than someone like Frank, who, while he has strong emotions about the game, tries to keep them in check, and when he fails, is kept in check by his coach.
Yeah, Will's interesting to me. I think Will is perhaps the most perceptive player this season, and I know that may sound weird, but I really feel like he's in tune with how everyone's operating and can kind of tell when people are bullshitting him. And perhaps I don't know that he's necessarily the most capable of taking the most appropriate reactive responses to that, but I think he's very good at knowing with accuracy where he stands with each person, and I think that's very important. And for that reason, and because I feel like the big threats should probably want to be keeping each other around for a while, and I think Will may be that kind of middle of the pack, but leaning more towards a big threat that could be in some jeopardy in the coming weeks, kind of like there's another gay guy, like Joshua from Big Brother 9, where you can see this guy, and everyone's on pretty decent terms with him, but he seems, for the most part, people are on decent terms with him, but he seems like someone that is just going to be tough to handle down the line, and I think that may end up happening with Will. But apart from that, I think Will's got a lot of game to him. And do you agree with that?
To an extent, I think when you talk about Will, it's difficult to know because he hasn't been in a spot where he's had to make any decisions so far. Obviously, he's had to decide who to vote for every week, but that's mainly been a decision that's been made within his team, and he hasn't had a time where it's been possible or correct to try and stray from that. He hasn't won HOH. He's never had to feel the pain of being nominated, mainly because of Janelle winning the coach's comp and saving him this week. Otherwise, he probably would have been up there. And it would have been interesting to see how he would have reacted to that. Now, my read on him, and it could be inaccurate, is that he's not the kind of player who would react to that very well.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be the type, I think Frank, week one when Frank got nominated, and this may have been because Boogie pulled him aside and said chill, but I think Frank's more the type to just kind of handle it well. I think Will might be a bit of a fan of this game. He little things I've just heard him say, on the live feeds and things. I feel like he actually kind of knows his history, or at least knows some of the basic game principles. But I do think you're right about he may not handle it the best, but I don't think he's going to be like a Willie Hance type where even the idea of nomination is going to set him off. I think he is going to understand there's a lot of game that gets played over the course of a week. And it seems like a running theme this year has been whoever it looks like is going to be going at first always ends up finding a way to stay. And I think it may be some kind of function of coaches out-leveling maybe even themselves where they think, oh, if this is the plan, then perhaps it needs to be the opposite of this because of some weird coach meta and wanting to take out the stronger or the wanting to take out the weaker players to leave the stronger ones in.
Yeah, it seems like in every season, the standard procedure is that after the nominations, there's always a bit of scrambling where everyone considers all their options and they think, well, what happens if you do go with a line that is not the most intuitive one? But generally, people stick to what they originally intended. You can predict pretty reasonably what they're going to do. This season, though, it seems to be very different. In the first week, we had this feeling out period where everyone's just getting to know each other and alliances are liable to switch very quickly. They're kind of very plastic. And that's pretty standard. But here, it seems like it hasn't settled down at all. There's always been in this constant state of flux. And we saw that this week where, well, it seemed this wasn't just him hamming up for the cameras or lying to Frank and Boogie to make them feel confident. He was seriously considering doing this. Now, one possible reason, I think, is that instead of just having two clearly defined sides of the house like we had in seasons like Big Brother 6, where that formed pretty early and just continued on all throughout the game, there are multiple different teams all interacting with each other in different ways. And as we said in our Survivor discussion, whenever that happens, and I think the best example is in Pearl Islands, where post-merge, we had almost three alliances instead of two because the Outcast's presence in the game just changed the dynamics in such a radical way. Whenever that happens, you're always going to get a much more unpredictable game just because the decision trees for each player and each group in the game just wildly go out of control, whereas it's much more simple to map things out if it's just a two-player game.
Yeah, and also it's because you have two separate games being played right now, and I think one of the interesting things to consider about, you know, we're done with the whole coaching phase, but at no point did any HOH ever even consider nominating anyone from their own team. I think someone tried to pitch it to Frank to nominate someone from his own team. I think someone was trying to pitch him nominate, like, Jen and Ashley at some point, but no one ever really even considered it, and I think if it's a purely individual game, of course these alliances of people who were just happen to be drafted by the same coaches probably wouldn't necessarily be forming in such exact combinations. Like, I don't think Joe, Ashley, and Will, for instance, would necessarily automatically keep each other safe were the coaches never a function. I think they would. The game would be a lot different if the coaches weren't even involved.
For sure. That's an interesting question. How do you think the alliances would have come down had the coach switch not been in place?
Oh, man, I don't even know. I haven't even thought about that too much. I think, honestly, that's a good question. I still think Kara is one of the big favorites. I think Kara and Danielle are still your favorites to go out early.
Yeah, that could easily be true. I mean, Kara does fit the kind of Carol archetype, which it seems to be a standard thing in Big Brother, where there's got a quiet, unassuming girl who doesn't really want to make any waves early, just gets nominated and gets booted without much fanfare. And she definitely fits that description. Danielle, I would agree with you as well, although I think the fact that that Dan is her coach is kind of not a good thing for her, at least in the early game, just because everyone knows how big a threat Dan is. And it's arguable that they do. I mean, we'll be getting to this later when we talk about Dan, but she on her own, no one would have any reason to care about her unless she was just so annoying that people cast aside logic and reason just had to vote her out.
Well, maybe also in this timeline, she and Shane do become a full-on showmance.
Well, yeah, Dan and Brittany both seem firmly against the idea of their players having a showmance. And
correctly.
Yeah, understandably. I mean, yeah. I think actually not the threat of that point, because I think it doesn't actually matter too much, but the idea that that could happen is something which brought Dan and Brittany closer together as well. And I think that's something that you have to keep in mind.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely going to see that come into play. Although I don't know necessarily how much that really even matters, because I think even if Danielle or Shane, wins HOH by themselves in the coaching phase, even if Dan's saying put up Shane, we've got to put up Shane, we've got to put up Shane, Danielle's not going to do it.
Well, do you think so? Do you think that Dan's hold on her is not so absolute?
I don't think it's so absolute. I think when it comes to Shane, it's not so absolute. I think when it comes to pretty much anything else, I bet it is, and I think that's why Dan is trying to nip Shane in the bud as a showmance and get him at least kind of within the realm of possibility for way down the line. But at the same time, I also think that's why Dan doesn't really have to be afraid of Shane for a while, because Shane's also not going to be coming after him because Danielle loves Dan, her coach.
Sure. One other player who might have been hurt by the coach twist is Frank, who, even though he did seem to get on well with Boogie, you know, they've worked well together, they have a good working relationship, I think many people, including the people who happen to have gained power in the early weeks, have seen Frank and Boogie as a pair as a threat, more so than they might have viewed Frank had he just been in the game individually. This is something which, to jump ahead a bit, Dan touched upon in this episode, where he said that, I have no reason to distrust Frank, whereas I have 2 seasons worth of evidence on which I have reason to distrust Boogie.
Right, yeah, you check the game tape and I can't give you such a high score.
Yeah, and this is the same thing that Shane said as well, which is, I trust Frank, but I don't trust Boogie, and it seems like, given that assumption, I pretty much have to put up Frank, because I know that I'm not going to be able to separate those two except by getting one of them out of the game, and, well, I can't get Boogie out of the game, he's ineligible, so I have to get out Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the person who perhaps benefited the most from this coach's twist is Ian, because I think he's probably someone who goes up early and often if he's left uncoached. And I think you might know kind of what I'm talking about. Just I don't know how easy of a time he would have fitting in with everyone if he didn't have Mike Boogie there helping him and kind of giving him ins with people.
Yeah, if it was left down to him to go out there and form an alliance by himself, then he could have had trouble. The coach just, though, created a situation where there were these prepackaged alliances coming into the game. So he didn't really have to do all that work. It was being done for him. And I imagine, had he tried to do that by himself, he could easily have done it in a way which was counterproductive. And so it's not only save him a lot of work, but save him doing that work and in the process putting a target on his back.
Yeah, and I don't think it would be a situation like with Ronnie or whatever where he's kind of indirectly screwed people over and then is rubbing everyone the wrong way. I think it's more just process of elimination. I think Ian's going to be someone, whether you want him up there or not, he's going to be someone no one's really going to have a problem with going up.
Yeah, he's the type of superfan who you don't have to worry about him overplaying because he's too humble to actually try and play the game. Like he's too scared to act on the wealth of knowledge that he undoubtedly has.
Yeah, we saw him not even want, he wouldn't even just give Britney a straight yes. He would give her, yeah, a 99%, but a 99% is worse than like 50-50 as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
If someone tells me it's 50-50, 99% means they're just trying to say, oh, it was just the 1% when it doesn't end up coming in.
Yeah, this is a type of thing where you can watch Big Brother all you like, but yeah, if you're that bad at just basic social interaction that you don't understand that people get worried by that sort of answer, then having watched and memorized 12 seasons of Big Brother isn't going to help you at all.
Yeah, this reminded me of at the merge in South Pacific where Ozzy or Keith pulls the whole team around and they're making sure no one's flipping, and Cochran says, well, do you want me to flip? Like, oh my God, dude. What you're saying is so much different than the message you're sending.
Okay, so Shane's final nominations end up being Joe and Frank. We said last week that we thought that his initial nominations could have been different and that those could have led to a different final outcome had he done that, one which would have been much more conducive to him having a high chance of success going forward. The way he did this, though, it painted a big target on his back. It put himself in a position where he had to choose a side, and whoever remained from that side after the dust had cleared was going to be after him no matter what in the future weeks. So possibly not the greatest outcome for Shane.
This was, for me, the second week in a row where, as I was, you know, following along on Twitter on the accounts that post the live feed summaries, where it seemed like Frank was becoming more and more of a lock boot. This was the second week in a row after with JoJo last week where I was just stunned that so many people wanted Frank out when I thought the other decision was clearly better. And like I said last week, I thought Joe and Ashley should have been the nominees.
Well, this is a good time to talk about this then. If you're Will and you are considering this, do you think it's actually a good thing for him to have done? We don't know what he would have done, given that we never had a vote, thank you, Alistair Grodner. But we can reasonably surmise, given what happened in the final day, that he would have stuck with his team. But do you think that would have been the right play for him?
No. I think at this point, I'm serious. I would literally be willing, if I were in the game in Will's position, to bet my Big Brother life on the fact that the coaches were going to be entering the next round. And so for that reason, I want to be keeping Frank around. I definitely want to be keeping Frank around over Joe, because I think Joe's going to be someone no one's ever going to prioritize as a target unless he really starts running his mouth. And I don't know if you're Will, how much you can really induce Joe running his mouth. Whereas if you keep Frank in, you know he's viewed as one of the biggest threats, if not the biggest threat in the house.
If you do think that the coaches are coming in this week, is that a disincentive for you to do that? Because you've seen how good Janelle is at competitions, and now if she's in the game as a player, her team, which formerly was just Joe and Ashley, who nobody really cares about, now actually stands a good chance of winning the endurance competition, and if that happens, then Will is almost certainly going up if he makes this move.
I don't know about that. Is there a way? I guess he can't really get away with disguising his vote, because they're going to know one way or the other who flipped. I first of all wouldn't say that anyone apart from Janelle of Joe, I wouldn't say Joe and Ashley are going to be winning in any kind of endurance competitions, at least against the remaining field. Janelle I would be concerned about. But I also think Janelle is big on kind of making amends with people, and for, you know, that may be kind of a ridiculous statement given some of her behavior in Big Brother 6. But with Big Brother 7, with dealing with people who I think she's more afraid of, or people who she thinks she could still potentially work with, I don't think she's so willing to throw someone like Will away.
Well, it's not so much a case of being willing to throw Will away if he's not there to throw away in the first place. Now, if you think he has made this clean break with you, if you're Janelle, then why have any reservations about putting him up? Because you know that once someone has broken for you like that, there's a much lesser chance of him ever wanting to work with you again compared to someone random like, say, Shane or Frank or whoever, who, sure, you may have had your differences with them in the past, but you haven't had this kind of fault in your relationship, which makes working together in the future less likely.
That's true. But you also haven't had that kind of history that makes the idea of working together in the future something more conceivable. Like, you can more quickly come up with a plan to work with, which may be a bit of a thin counter-argument. But I think the other thing is, if you're Will, I don't know how even if Janelle comes out, wins the HOH, is she really going to be coming after you, or is she going to be going after the guy who took her out in third place in All-Stars, who now she doesn't want to possibly let skate through the game and do the same thing again?
Well, that depends on whether you think that it's going to turn into coaches versus the newbies or not.
I don't know that it does. I think no matter how it turns out, it's going to be Janelle against Boogie.
Well, yeah, but that might not happen for a few weeks down the road, and we're talking about this decision, you know, here in the moment, where, sure, eventually it might be the case that it's just going to be something other than coaches versus newbies. But in the short term, everyone's going to think that that's what's going to happen, and that perception is going to make that being the case more likely. I think the idea that it's going to be coaches versus newbies is going to be so pervasive that anyone who's seen questioning it, either coach or newbie, is going to be ostracized by the other people in that group. So in the short term, at least, I think that there is going to be this dynamic where Janelle, if she goes after Boogie, even though that might be what, in her heart of hearts, she wants to do, she knows that that's probably not the smart thing to do, and that she's going to have a chance to do that later if she feels she really needs to.
Would that not be the smart thing to do? Because I don't know that if you're Mike Boogie, you really ever want to be going after anyone but Janelle if you're in power, and I think Janelle probably knows that.
Well, I think the only reason you would think that is if you think that Janelle is reacting emotionally to your past history together, the fact that you voted her out in All-Stars. If Janelle shows you that she's willing to think rationally and overcome that, then you actually don't have a reason to get her out. So for Janelle, it's not just a case of putting on this front that you don't care. If you genuinely don't care, then you have no reason to care, if that makes sense.
I understand. Okay. Take $500,000 out of someone's hands and then tell yourself confidently that, oh, they're probably not going to come after me for a couple of weeks. I think Janelle is always going to be Boogie's pressing interest, and I think their relationship even this season would indicate that. You know, they started out kind of by force working together in week one when their two teams came together to start taking out Team Dan, but then as soon as Dan got decimated, they clearly became the two powerhouses who were not going to be working together. And it's always been, ever since week two, ever since the Willie Hance meltdown, it's been Team Boogie against Team Janelle with just Danielle and Shane on their own.
Right, but I think that would have happened no matter who the coaches of those two teams were, given the fact that Dan lost a player in the first week, and then Brittany lost two players in the second week, and then Dan was down to one player because he'd had to evict Jody in the first week. I think whoever you have as the coaches of those two largest teams, it's just natural for them to go after each other at that point anyway. I think, obviously, the kind of heated dynamic between Janelle and Boogie makes that even more likely, is going to exacerbate that, but I think it was probably going to happen anyway.
Yeah, but no, but for that, what you just said, it's going to exacerbate that, but it's going to happen anyway, and it's just a bonus that it's Janelle and Boogie, where they, you're right, I believe that the heads of the two teams with three left are going to be going after each other. And incidentally, I think Dan couldn't be happier that he was, I think if he could pick any number of players to have entering his, like left on his team entering when he gets to enter, it'd be one. It'd be whatever the minimum number is to stay in the game.
Yeah, and believe me, we're going to talk about Dan in great detail a little bit later on. For now, though, I think you're just proving my point, aren't you? Unless you're agreeing with me and I'm not realizing it, because
I totally see what you're saying. I don't necessarily disagree with it. I'm just trying. I think there's certainly merit to the other side.
Yeah, I agree that in the dark, it's likely that Janelle and Boogie would come after each other, but I don't think you can use what happened here as evidence of that, because I think that was always going to happen given how the first few weeks played out.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay. What do you want to go into next?
There were some interesting things, just non-strategy related, from this week's episodes that I want to talk about. First, what was with the weird clothing choices amongst the men in the house? Will wearing a thong? I mean, who convinced him that that was a good idea?
I'm guessing he convinced himself that was a good idea. I'm guessing that's something he convinces himself of very regularly.
Right. Will is definitely someone who has a high opinion of himself in every aspect. But the fact that people... How do you live, like, around someone who acts like that? You just, like, avert your eyes whenever he comes into a room? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. That it'd be like living with Richard Hatch out on season one when he's walking around naked the whole time. Perhaps not to the same degree, but it's hard to even imagine what kind of response I would have, because it's never happened to me.
Well,
it's some fantastic podcast analysis, but I don't know.
I'm sure our audience were happy to hear that. Also, possibly even worse, is Shane wearing a pink tank top.
That one's interesting. I'm sure, Dom, you're not unaware that there have been some rumors circulating about Shane on the internet that perhaps,
I was going to say, it seems odd for him to be parading himself as this paragon of male heterosexuality. Like, I'm so strong, I've won all these competitions. At the same time, where he's wearing this bright, lurid pink. There's like traffic warden style.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who will tell you that real men wear pink, and those people are assholes.
Yeah, and to go back to these rumors that you're mentioning, there have been certain, as of yet unsubstantiated, there are clues there. There are rumors that Shane is in fact gay, and
this is how I put it. I'm a big fan of a former radio team, Puffin Stapes, and of the two, Joe Stapleton Stapes has a saying, story checks out. When a predictable news story happens, it's like, okay, that totally lines up. If Shane were to come out, perhaps, after the show, which would be totally fine, first of all, I think that would fall into the story checks out category more so than the story does not check out. I wouldn't be stunned, if I can phrase it like that.
Yeah, if you look, one of the best pieces of evidence, apparently, is his list of the people he's following on Twitter, which apparently consists of various male modeling magazines and stuff like that.
Well, in his defense, he is a male model.
Which, yeah, you can understand given that he's a male model, but even so, it seems slightly excessive. You wonder, you have to think about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, fair enough. Hey, man. And if he is, good for him. He's still managing to get way more girls than anyone else in the house, one way or the other, so.
Yeah, you think. Well, I was thinking, given that he clearly seems displeased by the fact that Danielle is following him around like a stalker, and let's be clear, this girl is certifiably insane. She is not leaving him alone for one moment. Like, you have to wonder, like, all these ex-boyfriends she talks about on the show and on the feeds, like, there are reasons these are ex-boyfriends.
Yeah, and by the way, I think we talked last week about the odds of Shane and Danielle spending a night together in the HOH. He asked her on, like, night two to stay tonight.
Right, but as far as we know, nothing's actually happened, which makes me think...
No, Dan put the kibosh on that pretty quickly. He said that's not going to fly. Do you have anything else from before we get to the America's vote?
Not much. I mean, what did you make of Brittany and her apparent overreaction to an admittedly poor choice of words on Ian's part, but... This is just standard Ian behavior. Like, this isn't him trying to deceive you. And if he were trying to deceive you, I don't think he would do so in such an obvious way. Like, the fact that it seems so weird, it should be proof that actually nothing suspicious is going on here.
Yeah, I think if you're Ian, you should probably be able to pick up on Brittany's kind of social cue, where when you say it's not in the foreseeable future or whatever, and she says, all I want to hear is yes, and she gives you a second chance to just say yes, and you still go with, yeah, it's just not in the foreseeable future. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's not in Brittany's nature to not say what she thinks. And when she's telling you directly, I'm not happy about what you're saying. Yeah, that take the hint, Ian. Like, that's
yeah,
difficult.
Brittany, listen, no, under no circumstances is he going up. I would self-evict before it happened.
Right, it's, I mean, I appreciate Brittany's desire for proper diction as much as the next person, but I think she's just overreacting here. Like, I can
understand. I don't know that it's overreacting, because I think she's getting the very clear message, which is, no, Shane is not safe, and if Shane's not safe, that means she is potentially in jeopardy.
Okay, but...
She's certainly misplaying, I will say, but I would be feeling the same things and not saying the same things, I guess.
Right, but coming into this conversation, I assume she was pretty close to 100% confident that if Ian won HOH, then Shane was not going up. Now, the fact that that may have just decreased in her mind to, like, 80% or whatever, is that really enough to get you to change your entire strategy for the week, given that Ian is probably very unlikely to win HOH anyway?
I don't know that there's such a number as 80% confident when it comes to this kind of issue. I think it's either you know with certainty you're not going up, or anything could happen, realistically.
Sure, but I don't think your assessment of Ian should change based on this, because... You've lived with the guy for about a month now. You should know that he's probably the kind of guy who, if Boogie puts a lot of pressure on him to act in a certain way, then, or it doesn't have to be Boogie, it could be anyone who's suitably convincing, then his mind is probably going to be swayed. And I don't think you need that conversation to realize that. And so, in some ways, it doesn't really matter what he says. Like, that's going to happen no matter what he says now.
No, Brittany wanted to just hear him say it so she could kind of appease herself. You're exactly right. If you think he's the kind of guy who's going to be susceptible to Boogie's kind of manipulation, no matter what he tells you, he's still going to be equally susceptible. And I think that is the major issue, is she does think exactly that, that this kid, no matter what he's saying to me, right, that, which is why if you're Ian, why don't you just say yes? Where it's like, you can later say, oh, Boogie got to me, and I had to end up changing my mind. But just for now, say yes, and hopefully you don't win HOH, and you don't have to then put him up.
I think the worry there would be that if you're making that kind of excuse, it just seems so pathetic. Like, well, I really wanted to do this, but somebody said something to me, and I didn't want to do it anymore. Like, Ian has already had a tough enough time gaining respect from the other players in the house as it is. I don't think he needs to make that any harder for himself. Then again, I'm not sure Ian is consciously processing all of that at the time that he's having this conversation and saying all these stupid things.
I think Ian, if I can respond to the last part of that first, I think Ian's aware of his image, that people probably don't think of him as like a serious player. They think of him as someone who's kind of Boogie's puppet, at least for the time being. And I think if I thought that was the image, the perception of me, I wouldn't be that worried. I love Ian's position right now, which is something we'll be talking about in a little bit.
Do you think Ian has that level of self-awareness, though? The reason I bring it... One of the main reasons I question that is his relationship, or lack thereof, with Ashley, who is quite apparent, but from any basic reading of social behaviour, that she is not into him at all, that, in fact, she's actually getting quite annoyed at this point by his refusal to let this go, and yet it just seems oblivious of the whole thing.
You know who I blame for this? Eric Stein. I think he got everyone like Ian's hopes up when he got with Jessica.
Yeah, the fact that Eric somehow managed to, like, hit his one out on the river just...
How does that happen? No, don't get me wrong. Eric, a charming and good-looking guy by all means, but Jessica is solidly probably not so much what Eric's used to. But inside the Big Brother, actually one of my favorite lines from all of Big Brother 8 was when he was talking about his competition with all the girls, where all he had left is, like, a gay guy, evil dick, and this 6'5 ogre in the form of Zach.
Yeah, and he had a pretty good table draw there, you might want to say.
Yeah. But still, hey, well played. Certainly, don't want to take anything away from Eric Stein as a player or as a master pickup artist.
No, not at all. Okay, so I think that covers everything in the latter half of Shane's week. So we can get on to what we really want to talk about now, which is the quite obviously rigged, and let's not beat about the bush. This is clearly rigged.
This is straight up fixing.
Yeah, so let's go into how this actually went down. So it's Thursday night. Frank is about 3 minutes away from walking out the Big Brother house, and Julie Chen's voice comes over the microphone, and the first clue that something is amiss here is the fact that this is all happening slightly earlier than scheduled, because this happens with about 15-20 minutes left in the show, I believe, when normally this is the time which they'd be using for the final pleas from the house guests and all the usual procedure. So now when Julie interrupts this to say that something different is happening, then immediately alarm bells start ringing in people's heads, I'd have to think.
Oh yeah, I'm sure no one was surprised. I heard rumors going around on Twitter that they had been told like an hour or two in advance that the nominees wouldn't get to make a final plea that night. So I think they all understood something different was going to happen prior to the show starting. But if we can just get right into it, you know, this is what we said. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So what that something different is Julie says that the coaches will now have a chance based on America's vote, which, let's be honest here, this is going to happen no matter what. And even on the 1% chance or whatever that America didn't vote for this, firstly, it was going to happen anyway. And secondly, the way that they had set this up, they could control who would come back in the event that this happened anyway.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I like your idea, and I think you're absolutely right that had miraculously none of the coaches pushed the reset button, Frank is going to be one of the people that gets to come back into the house anyway. So there was really no way for him to lose last night.
Yeah, and so the idea behind this reset button is that if at least one of the coaches presses it, it only has to be one, then all four of the coaches come into the game as players, their ability to coach ends. The implementation of this struck me as very weird, because now the decisions that one coach makes are now binding over all of the other coaches, potentially.
When this episode started, I would have definitely, if you had asked me, could you hate the way they're implementing bringing these coaches in as players any more than you currently do? I would have said no, there is absolutely no way they could do it any worse than they did. They found a way, not surprisingly. Like Dom said, the way it works is all four of the coaches have the opportunity to press the reset button. If any one of them presses it, they are all four then entered. Anyone who said no, as Boogie did, still doesn't, he can't then just still get to leave. He's entering as a player as well.
Yeah, just the way I look at it, it's just stop the charade and just put them in the game. If you know that's what's going to happen anyway. There's no reason to insult the intelligence of the audience, of the players, of the coaches, by making them go through this like ridiculous process. Just put them in the game and have it progress as normal.
Yeah, this is what they knew two things when this season began with certainty. They were going to have the day one. They were going to have the coaches enter the game and give them immunity for as long as they could. And two, they were then going to put them in as players. They knew those two things were going to happen. They absolutely knew that these coaches were going to be entering as players the entire time. I promise you, they of course didn't know exactly how they were going to do it. And they came up with this abortion of an idea, but whatever. It's just offensive is the only word I can really even think of. And I understand that people out there don't really care about it as much as you and I perhaps do, maybe even me in particular. But this is really absolutely brutal as far as I'm concerned. And I feel horrible for the people who were evicted because of this coach's twist. And I think JoJo certainly fits that category. Just to name, I think that's not really the point I was trying to make, I guess. But it's just grossly unfair to me. And I'm still kind of upset that Allison Grodner is still running the show here, because I feel like someone more capable could have done something a lot better here.
Yeah, the way I cope with it is to just treat it as like an exercise in comedy. Like, can they find a way to fuck it up in an even more ludicrous fashion? I treat it as a game. I think you have to look at it like that, otherwise you're just going to be frustrated whenever something like this happens. And it's going to happen every single season while the current production team is in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a bit about the coaches who did and did not choose to push this button, because Janelle, Brittany, and Dan all pushed the button, some more enthusiastically than others, and Boogie decided not to push the button. What did you make of that decision?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of that, because it seems like I can see the argument that Boogie generally doesn't want to come into the game because he apparently thought that there wouldn't be such a long time commitment potentially, that if there were, it would be because he still had a decent chance of winning the coach's prize by having multiple team members left in the game. And he was actually in a pretty good position. Like, Frank had just been safe, you know, another example of blatant rigging on the production's part. He had Ian and Jen, who, sure, they're not the best players left in the game, but they're at least padding for his team. Like, he's no longer all in on Frank anymore. So I don't know. I can see why he wouldn't want to come into the game. Then again, I don't think he's in any position to complain that he is, given that he was granted 4 weeks in immunity anyway, and that he could easily have been gone by this point had he started as in the game as a player.
Yeah, sure, but I think he probably would not have come back. Because Boogie, to me, throughout this entire time, has seemed, during the draft, I said Boogie seems like he's drafting as the rules stand now, instead of under the assumption that he's going to then get to come back in. I thought he coached the hell out of his team. I thought he did a great job, and he always seemed to be playing like he was genuinely coaching, as if he was going to stay a coach the whole time, which I would not say about any of the three others by any means. I feel horrible for Mike Boogie about this. I know he and Janelle were talking about that on their contract they had agreed something like, they were talking about on the live feed where they said they would not stay past the jury phase when this was all just a rumor about them coming in. They were saying, oh, it can't be true because we both signed contracts, because we both have little babies that we don't want to spend the entire summer away from. And now they subsequently are taking that away from them. And now Boogie is, of course, in not a great position and now has to fend for himself instead of being able to play vicariously through Ian, Jen, and Frank.
I find it hard to believe that the coaches, when they sign that contract and when they agree to play the game in this different way, didn't have the idea that they were going to enter the game at some point. Like, this is not a good... Like, it just doesn't make sense as a financial decision for them to do this if the only thing they're competing for is the $100,000 prize for first place as a coach.
Well, this is... I think I saw some breaking news earlier that the coach has got $20,000 now for entering as players.
Well, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would make a lot of sense, but I'm assuming that that wasn't, or maybe it was, we're not in a position to know, but I'm assuming that wasn't implied in the original agreement.
No.
Okay. Does that suggest to you then that this wasn't, that this was a kind of a last minute thing thrown together by the production team, where, like, if they need this monetary incentive to agree to act in the way that production wants, then maybe they haven't really thought it through that much?
I certainly don't think they thought through from more than a week and a half ago how they were going to, exactly how they were going to bring the coaches in. And that's probably giving them too much credit in terms of how much time they've spent on it. But if I'm Mike Boogie here, quite honestly, I probably consider when I'm going in to press the button or not press the button, I just walk right past the couch and say, okay, I'm going to go out this way. At the door in the diary room. Like, I'm out of here.
Well, you keep saying that, but at this point, the time you spent in the game under this apparently flawed assumption that you're only been playing the game in a certain way, that time is a sunk cost. You can't get that back. So you have to make this decision about how you're going to play the game going forward, regardless of what's happened over the past few weeks.
I think if you're Mike Boogie, it's much safer to say that you have, with three players remaining to the 1-1 and three of the other coaches, your expectation, even though you're only getting 1/5 of the prize, were you to play and get first place yourself, is much higher if you remain a coach.
Right, I think production's logic here, and I actually agree with it, is that it wouldn't make sense for some of the coaches to enter the game and some of them to remain as coaches. It would just, the results of that would be very weird indeed. So you either have to have all of them enter the game or none of them enter the game. You obviously don't want none of them to enter the game because that just defeats the whole point of bringing them back in the first place. So you want all of them to enter the game, but you've seen this vibe coming from a few of them that they actually don't want this to happen. So you can't just say, right, you're in the game, you can't do anything about it. You have to make it look as though there was a choice to be made and that, okay, by the way, you got screwed over by one of the other coaches. And incidentally, this creates more drama, which is good for TV.
Yeah, as it turns out, this is great for us too. Win, win, win.
Yeah, that, as a TV viewer, I love everything that happened on Thursday night's episode. Like, I'm glad that Frank said in because I like him. I think he makes the game more interesting. I'm thrilled that all the coaches are in the game now. I think that's going to lead to a ton of interesting situations over the next few weeks. So it comes back to this question of whether you value the fairness of the game over excitement as a viewer, and positions you can take on that are legitimate, and it just comes down to which one you hold. But I think the way it went down, even if it was done in a kind of questionable way, I think that's going to make more people happy than the opposite would have done.
Yeah, and I also think this kind of, it won't to the average viewer certainly, but for me this really tarnishes even if Frank goes on to win here. Because I think, of course, part of the twist was designed specifically to save exactly Frank. I think if it's a situation where, for instance, like Joe and Ian are up on the block there, the twist would suddenly be if you press the reset button, both of the nominees are gone.
Yeah, because it seems to me like there have been these efforts in place to save Frank. I mean, obviously, there's this standard DR manipulation that you hear about where somebody goes into the DR thinking they're going to do a certain thing, and now they come out an hour later and suddenly they've been convinced, they've been converted. That just happens every season, though, depending on who Godwin's favourites are. It seems her favourite is Frank, and there have been multiple small things that have been done and big things that lead to him being saved. Firstly, in his HOH week, he gets to essentially evict two people who would have come after him. Now, you can argue, based on the precedent that was set in Big Brother 11 with Shima, that, okay, this was fine because the eviction of the player in question occurred at a different point, and so it was fine for Frank to make nominations anyway. But I think if Frank had been stripped of his HOH privileges there, you couldn't really argue that that was unfair. Whereas I think there is an argument to be made that the way it went down as it happened was unfair.
It's really letter of the law versus spirit of the law, because letter of the law is if one of the nominees flips out and gets evicted, the HOH title gets stripped. And here it's basically, Willie was half an hour away from being nominated and he knew it, which is why he then flipped out. But on a technicality now, Frank then gets to go make more nominees or more nominations. And I want to say that to answer your question from a little while ago, I have a conditional answer. If I'm a player, I'm always valuing the fairness of the game more. And if I'm a viewer, I'm not so much always, but I'm much more inclined.
If your name is Jeff Schroeder, you don't care about the fairness of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, quickly, I want to say about Frank. I really like Frank, and I'm really, really, I was thrilled on one end. I was like, oh, this is great. Frank gets to stay in. This is going to be awesome. This show's going to be a lot better because Frank is staying in. At the same time, obviously this ruling is atrocious.
Yeah, it's not like stopping the eviction here was actually necessary to agree. In fact, like the way that they set this up, where no one went home in this week, it means that there's going to be one more double eviction episode somewhere down the line. Like, the natural thing to do here would have been, okay, it's halfway through the episode, one person's evicted, and, oh, by the way, the coaches are now in the game, and we go to HRH. That would have been how you might expect it to happen had any other combination of two people been on the block here.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was very conditional that it was Frank, the most popular newbie, I would imagine, up on the block.
Well, is that true? Like, is he popular with the fans, or is he just popular with production?
I think he's pretty popular. Who else would be? Who's getting anywhere near the screen time apart from Ian? And Ian's not getting overly positive screen time.
Right. I mean, you'd expect the people who are popular with the fans and those who are popular with production, those two subsets are coextensive to a degree. But it seems like on most of the fan websites, and you can argue how representative these are of the viewing public, it seems like a lot of people aren't big fans of Frank. And it's maybe like a self-fulfilling thing where, because it's rigged for him, people start not liking him anymore because they just object to it on principle. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I certainly have nothing against Jeff and Jordan, but I think Jordan's win is certainly tainted in Big Brother 11 because of the coup de Jeff. And I think that's a solid transition now into when we want to talk about Big Brother. Obviously, as we brought up before, this kind of riggage is not unprecedented by any means. And I have a list now in front of me where I want to talk about some of the historically bigger things that we've seen along these lines, because this is now getting talked about in the pantheon of the all-time great production interference things. And this is all dating all the way back to season 8. And for the people who haven't seen seasons 8 through 13, tough shit, because CBS is completely shutting down Quirky Dude, which sucks because that guy has done a lot for the Big Brother fan community. But nonetheless, I'm sure many people have seen them and know what we're talking about. And the ones we're going to be talking about, I think the big contenders, I pulled one from each of the last several seasons. First, of course, from Big Brother 8, the entire America's Player twist in general. Sharon getting kind of fucked over at the Final Four head of household in Big Brother 9. Dan's jury trip in Big Brother 10. The aforementioned coup de Jeff. Rachel's pretzel message from Big Brother 12 that we talked about with Matt Hoffman in one of our previous episodes. And then, of course, the final 6 twist in Big Brother 13, where there was basically a double veto. So, Dom, let's get right into this.
Okay. Of those, I think that Dan's jury trip in Big Brother 10 is the least severe, because in my mind, you have to distinguish between examples of quote-unquote riggage where it gives an unfair advantage to one person, but it's not specified who that person is, versus something like America's Player, where, everyone just gets a flat evil dick and we all just see him and his daughter march to an inevitable victory, where it's clearly designed to help one player get an unfair advantage.
I would say this was, for those people who don't remember, at the Final Four of Big Brother 10, Dan Giesling, of course, from Big Brother 14, was playing in a luxury competition against the other people left in the Final Four, those people being Memphis, Jerry, and Keisha. And this was a competition where they would go out to the backyard, and one at a time, there were a ton of just random various articles and objects and people and animals out there. And one at a time, they would get covered up, and they would have to just, it was like a, what's it called? Like a Rebus puzzle. Basically, you get visual clues to interpret a sentence. And I think if you think critically about the competition Dan's up against, I don't think there's ever any other outcome than him winning that competition. And I think if there was any other outcome, the prize would not be something as cushy as a jury trip when Dan is by far the most popular player left, but might have done a bit of damage with his replacement nominee roulette antics.
Okay, but he still had to go through a procedure to obtain that reward.
Yeah, I agree. I would say I don't think it's anything close to the exact same competition that they played for the coup d'etat in All-Stars, where it's at least intellectually a much closer match.
Sure, but I think this kind of thing where you win a trip and so you win a competition and the reward is you get to go on a jury trip, I think this is an interesting thing that could be featured in an innocent way in a regular season. Whereas the same isn't true of something like making America award someone the coup d'etat when you clearly know who it's going to.
Right, yeah, and I want to begin actually by saying I don't disagree with you at all that I think Dan's jury trip is the least offensive, but I would say I do not think it's a coincidence that we've never seen anything close to it again. I think their intent was clearly to get Dan some help on the jury, and I don't think that's hard to. Do you disagree with that?
Well, I think they knew that that would be the inevitable effect for the person who won. Like, it's not as if this jury trip is going
to
hurt.
And you don't think that they wanted Dan to win that?
I mean, I think it's certainly possible that they did, but...
Why would they ever want to send Jerry on a jury, or Keisha or Memphis on a jury trip?
Yeah, this is true. I mean, at that point, though, I appreciate that this isn't a very good argument, but Dan was probably going to win anyway, so if you're looking just at the results, it probably wasn't going to matter. I mean, that doesn't...
No, it struck me as deliberate, and I think it's easy to see why. But I agree that it's the least offensive. And I would say the second least offensive would be Rachel's pretzel message, although I think Matt Hoffman would disagree strongly.
Yeah, here, like, it doesn't bind anyone to a particular course of action. Like, for instance, the twist in Big Brother 13 where the pairs thing was reintroduced to the final six, that affected what people could do. Like, the Rachel's pretzel message, sure, it may have convinced Brendan to do a certain thing, but he could and possibly would have done that anyway. Like, this isn't something which... Like, the most offensive examples of rigging for me are when a player wants to do something which is within the rules of the game and something prevents him from doing it. And this is not an example of that.
Okay. This, to me, the biggest problem I have with this is I cannot convince myself that Rachel came up with this idea herself. I think someone told her to do this, and that infuriates me.
Well, I think Rachel is vindictive enough that I think it's entirely possible that she could have done this by herself.
Then counterpoint number two, of course, as Matt told us when we talked to him, they were not allowed to use any kind of written communication. He got yelled at for even just drawing smiley faces in the suede couch or whatever. And this is, of course, blatant violation of that rule. And this is, of course, communication between a juror and a person still in the game.
Yes,
which is in general, I'm not as big of a fan as you of that.
Well, I don't want it to be a regular thing by any means, and I think if it happened, it should be restricted to one person meeting with one juror for a limited amount of time, and I'm not entirely comfortable with them getting to choose who that person is, but I think it's an interesting idea that could be deployed sparingly across seasons just to lighten things up a bit.
Okay, yeah, I mean... I wouldn't hate it. I think it would actually probably help the better players do well, which I guess I want to see. But I don't know. I just am such a big proponent of just put 14 strangers in a house and lock the door and start rolling the camera. We're fine. We don't need any of this stuff.
Right. And so moving on to the most egregious examples of rigging then, I think the Sharon H. Rachel debacle in Big Brother 9, I don't know. I don't know what to say about this because it just... It's clearly just stupid and wrong, and I don't know how to make that sound any... I don't know how to drag that out any further.
This is one... People at home may not even know what we're talking about, because on paper, unless you're deliberately looking for it, it went relatively smoothly if you're not paying that close attention. But at the Final Four in Big Brother 9, they're playing an HOH competition, and the goal, realistically, from production standpoint, is for anyone but Sharon to win, because America's not really in love with Sharon, even though I really like Sharon, and I know a lot of people may disagree or think she was boring, but whatever. And they really, it's a Q&A competition, and she's leading by one, and there's a question about how many people that used to know each other started the game, or how many pre-existing relationships were there. And the eventual answer they gave, or the options were two or more than two, basically. And the house knew of two, and there were two between actual contestants. And Sharon correctly put two, or not correctly, arguably put two. Ryan, I will give him credit for knowing that this is the last question and knowing he has to take the answer that he doesn't think Sharon is taking. Correctly goes back to, it's true or false. He goes back to false, even though, shrugging his shoulders, just knowing, I'm not going to win this, but I have no choice. And then they give him false by saying that the pet hamsters counted as a pre-existing relationship, and thus two was wrong, sending it to a tiebreaker and sending Sharon out the door.
Sure. I don't think it's worth taking too long to go after all the examples of rigging, because I think for anyone who's familiar with them already, they know that rigging was involved here to some degree. And, like, it might be a valuable history lesson for some listeners, but beyond that, I don't think it's...
Yeah, I guess if I can just quickly, I think Big Brother 8, nothing could ever, because of the America's Player thing, nothing could ever really even happen to Evil Dick as long as he or Danielle won one of HOH or POV each week, and then had the only competent player acting in their best interest despite his own wishes. They, of course, never go nearly as deep as they did. I still don't think either of them even begins to realize how lucky they got about America's Player. But apart from that, the coup de Jeff, I think, is by far the most offensive. Of course, when production put the poll up, they knew that Jeff was going to win that poll in a landslide, completely killed Shima's HOH. Of course, Shima didn't handle it well, but I can certainly get behind the sentiment. When it comes to Sharon and that Final Four situation, I think Sharon needs to get paid some dollar figure, but apart from that, I think she should be okay with it. But they need to give her like $100,000 or something, because they legit just took it from her.
I think it's worse than that, Sharon, because if she wins that HOH, as she should have done, then she's safe through Final Four, so she's there at Final Three, and if she had made the Final Two, then she would have won. Like, that's not in question, I don't think. So, if you assume that...
Adam might beat her, I think. But that's not the point at all. So
maybe, but I think she knows not to take Adam. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, if you assume that she has a 1-in-3 chance of winning the Final HOH, and obviously the other two were perfectly competent in competition, so that might not be true. But even then, like...
Well, she's probably there with Sheila instead of the two boys.
Well, yeah, like, it depends, because we don't know how things would happen.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
You get the point. Like, if she's there at Final Three, she has a very legitimate shot of winning the game. And if I was Sharon, I would be pissed about this, severely pissed about
it. Yeah, but she's, you know, good on CBS for picking the one person who seems like she doesn't even really care about it.
Fair, yeah. Now,
I think the underlying principle with all of this, I think, friend of the podcast, John Cochran, put it very well on Twitter yesterday during, like, live tweeting the episode when he said something along the lines of, they should change the motto to accept the unacceptable.
On a related note, actually, one way in which the game is influenced by external factors, which I think doesn't get talked about nearly enough, is the ability for people to communicate messages through the letters from home that are given to the HOHs. Now, Evil Dick has said that during Big Brother 8, he had his son write messages in code. I mean, not in the type of code that you think about when you talk about, like, ciphers or whatever, but messages hidden within the HOH letter telling him who he could and couldn't trust based on the public information that everyone had available to them by watching the feeds, by watching the show. If I was in the game, I'd be fucking petrified of this. Like, I would be scared about declaring anything in the DR or on the feeds, anything that could potentially be seen by anybody else, which in the Big Brother house is everything.
Right, yeah, exactly. Evil Dick, of course, the most famous example, and I'm actually kind of surprised he was so open about it, because I think he probably could have known he was going to get asked back to play again and could have theoretically done the same thing again.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's grossly unfair. And by the way, I want to point out, an unrelated note, but someone in the thread made a good point, in the 2+2 thread, that Janelle should not be allowed within the rules of the game to give away her wedding ring as some kind of incentive.
Yeah, and
which is unrelated, but I think that's a completely valid point. I think that's along the same lines.
Yeah, let me explain what people are getting at for people who haven't heard of this. Janelle, as part of this effort to convince Shane to go after Boogie's team instead of hers, she offered her wedding ring to them for safekeeping as a sign of, like, look, I trust you guys. I wouldn't do this unless I trusted you implicitly. Which, I mean, is a convincing plea coming from someone like Janelle. But the point is, she shouldn't be in a position to make that plea. Like, this is using things from outside the game. I mean, obviously, physically it's inside the game, but this is not an in-game factor to,
right, yeah,
to influence people's decisions.
This is different than, I think, like, Boogie, Ian, and Jen should be allowed to, and I think can negotiate with the collective 10,000 that they got in that coaches competition.
Yeah, like, if you allow this, then where do you draw the line? Am I just allowed to bring my checkbook into the Big Brother house and just write people, like, I'll just promise the world to people in exchange for safety every week? Like,
that's what I was going to say. Like, Jimmy Johnson on Survivor could easily afford to give everyone $2 million if they just let him get to the end and win. Yeah, I agree. Getting any kind of outside information in terms, as far as the actual game itself is concerned, like, information that's being given to you based from someone who has seen diary rooms and seen the episodes and everything, is completely out of bounds, as far as I'm concerned.
you can argue the same thing that people said to argue against Danielle winning Big Brother 3, which was that you know that this is a thing that happens, and as unfair as it is, you have to adapt to that in the only way that you can. When you know that the HOH has access to this channel of information, you can complain about it all you want, but you can't act surprised when this ends up fucking you over.
Well, I would suspect that within the rules of CBS saying, okay, you can write, your loved one just got HOH, you can write a letter, but you can't say anything about the game. I imagine that's in the rules, that they're not allowed to say anything about the actual game, like anything that the player wouldn't know.
Sure, but what I'm saying is, if someone lost the game because of this, and then after the game was complaining, look, I got screwed over by someone being able to get all this information, then I think you could plausibly say to them, you knew this could happen, and yes, it's bullshit, and we agree with you, but you should have played around it anyway.
I think the most valid case could be made against Danielle Reyes, who did know after seeing Big Brother 2, the jury does get to go watch the episodes.
Yeah.
And of course, they changed the rule because of it correctly, and it shouldn't have, like, they certainly should have had the jury sequestered throughout. But I have the least amount of sympathy for that. Although, of course, she got robbed completely.
Yeah, definitely. But the argument that I'm kind of tossing around as a hypothetical, I don't think it really works, because what are you supposed to do? Are you just supposed to not say anything to anybody? Like, this is...
No, that's the point. Yeah, it's impossible.
Like, firstly, even if production let you do that, which they obviously wouldn't, then it would be incredibly damaging to your interest in the game, because people, you just wouldn't be able to form connections with people. It's like, you know, you're in this catch-22 situation where you have to assume that the game is being played by the rules, even if there's a pretty high chance that it isn't.
I don't see. I feel like at a certain point, like if I'm in an end game and it's down to me, Jordan, Jeff, and some random other person, I'm pretty sure that this is not going to be going my way the majority of the time. And I think you can start at that point. And obviously, that's an exaggeration of extremes to prove a point. But I think there is a certain point, at least, where you can start saying, okay, the balance is going to be tipped in someone else's favor. And I think that we could be seeing that down the line here with Janelle. If she ends up going deep with some people, I could see perhaps Ian saying, well, hang on a minute. A lot of things have historically gone this girl's way when it comes to random chance and competition selection. So maybe this is not the best idea.
Yeah, one of the things that Kevin Campbell, and it might be weird that we're bringing his name into this, but let me explain. One of the things that he gets criticized for a lot is using his vote at the Final Four to vote out Michelle instead of Jordan. Now, a lot of people have said, well, you know, just based on the numbers, you know, given that Michelle was a tough competitor and that Jordan hadn't really won anything up to that point, you might think that taking Jordan was actually the better play, that he was correct and just it didn't happen to work out for him. But if you're in a position like that and you know that she has been the person you're considering voting out has been a beneficiary of rigging in the past, especially that late in the game when it's this close to the finals, I think you just have to assume that it's going to be continued if it's at all possible. And so even if in a vacuum you might want to keep that person, I think you just vote her out there.
Yeah, that's also valid. And I also think it was worth considering in that season that they knew by that time that Shima was out and she was not going to be in the jury house, and that leaves six jurors and they can't have an odd number. So what else would they do besides America's vote, which probably means Jordan has one locked?
Well, yeah, like if you're Natalie there and you're considering going up against Jordan, you have to know that this vote is in play and that production gets to choose how it's decided, and that given that they've already shown favor towards Jordan, it's going to go towards her.
Yeah, well, I think if you're anyone, you're going to know whatever this mystery vote is not going to, it's going to go for Jordan. You can probably make a list and say what order it's going to go in.
The thing is, people like Natalie and Jesse and that lot often think that they're the ones that are going to be loved by America, but when you've already had concrete proof in the form of the coup d'etat, then you have, even if you're the person most lacking self-awareness in the world, you can't ignore it at that point.
Yeah, I remember when the coup d'etat and on the Big Brother live feeds, they were all, before they knew what it was, calling it like the wizard power, and they were all trying to figure out which one of them had it. And not many people, maybe this was just how it was portrayed on the show, but I think a lot more people I remember on the live feeds were, they thought like Ronnie had it was one of the theories for a long time, and Jeff was just one of the possibilities when it seemed so obvious to, of course, the people watching at home. But, like, people thought Jesse would have it, even knowing that America screwed... Speaking of people who've gotten raw deals from America, Jesse, back-to-back seasons, just gets completely screwed in spots where he wouldn't have otherwise gone.
Yeah, It makes me wonder why they brought him back if they're just going to screw him over again.
Like, probably to screw him over again.
Well, yeah, it was just like some long con on their part just to screw over Jesse in the most sadistic, time-consuming way possible.
I was thinking about him because I see him on Twitter all the time, of course. I got to follow Mr. Pectacular, trademark. And I honestly kind of miss Jesse Godders. And I may be crazy for saying that, and it may just be because it's been a while and I haven't seen him on my TV in a while, but I feel like he, compared to most of the people they've cast since his seasons, really steps it up in the diary room in terms of, I know it's gross overconfidence, but I really like that, especially from him.
Yeah, well, I'm confident that when Ian randomly wins 8-8 4 weeks from now and opens Pandora's box, we all see Jesse Godders standing there in all his glory.
I really hope so. Also, another speculation in the thread, how are we going to find a way to work in Jeff and Jordan into this season? Do they have a new show coming? They do have a new show coming out, actually, I think.
They're probably going to bring them back to host some competition or whatever.
Probably, yeah. They do have a new show coming out, which I haven't thought of until just now. I'm sure we're going to see them, yeah.
Okay, so we've been on this very lengthy tangent about rigging and what's acceptable and what isn't and stuff. Going back to the meat of the game now. So the coaches are in the game, and immediately we go to the endurance competition, and this is to be expected when it's at this stage in the game. We saw it last year, the one that Danielle Donato won for the first time, when Brendan was evicted, and then this was a standard thing to have endurance at this stage of the game. And as anyone who's seen this type of show knows, from Big Brother to Survivor, competitions of this sort usually favour short, athletic women. So coming into this competition, we have to expect that people like Frank or Boogie or Dan probably aren't going to be winning this one, and it's going to come down to Brittany, Janelle, whoever it may be.
I'm sure Matt Hoffman's thrilled to hear you say that.
Well, he's short and probably not female, but rounding up to 50%.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. Like, this is a competition where, as soon as, and I should have seen this coming, I, of course, lost my bet on Janelle being the ultimate victor in the upcoming endurance competition, because this is one where you've really got to be pretty small and have a low center of gravity to do well in, and perhaps most importantly, like small feet are really helpful here when you can get your whole foot on the board, but also have the upper body strength, but not the weight.
Yeah, so this competition is the same one we saw in Big Brother 12, but just with a different, like, visual background, where they're standing on short planks jutting out from a wall, and they only have a bar to hang their hands on, and they just have to stay out there while getting pelted with various liquids or whatever and having the backdrop move until only one person's left. Now, Matt Hoffman on Twitter said something very interesting, which was that if you think back to the paint can competition in his season, which basically works on the same principle, except that, you know, you have more space to hang your feet on, and the deciding factor is dizziness rather than anything else. One thing that happened there was Brittany immediately put her hands behind the bar to kind of wedge herself in, with the result that, firstly, she wasn't going to randomly fall off because her arms were in the way, and secondly, she didn't have to spend any energy or hurt her hands holding onto the bar. So basically, if she had been able to continue in that position, she would have won that competition, and it wouldn't even have been close. And production stepped in after about 5 minutes of this and told her, look, you can't put your hands behind that. It's just going to be unfair to everyone else. And if you let everyone do it, then the competition is just not going to end. So we have to forbid it. But this time, when the same strategy was possible, they didn't do that for some reason. Now, do you think this was a conscious decision on their part to maybe tilt the odds in Brittany's favor a bit?
No, I don't think so, because while it's certainly the same basic concept for a competition, I don't think the paint can went up and down. Like, they didn't go up and down rotating, like leaning on their back to facing forward nearly to the same degree where they're basically holding on like upside down, where you may even need to get in there. And I think Matt himself on that tweet you mentioned said that he himself tried it and that it was just the easiest thing in the world and everyone could have stayed up there all night, like you said. And I'm going to be interested. I'm going to be watching when they air the footage of this competition to see if they did, in fact, keep them from looping their arms behind there.
Yeah.
But no, to answer your question, I wouldn't necessarily cry foul if they didn't tell them that they couldn't do it this time.
Okay. It makes me wonder why everyone else taking part in the competition didn't realize that this was possible, because I'm not saying they should have just realized instantly as soon as they saw what was going on, but once you're up there, wouldn't you try different hand positions to see what's most comfortable and then end up, even if unintentionally, backing into this strategy?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever position you find is not going to remain comfortable for longer than like 90 seconds, and you're going to experiment until you inevitably come up with this.
Right. So as it happens, nobody else does, and we see the expected result pretty much, which was that all of the men are out pretty early, except for Shane and Ian. And Shane, let it be said, a great performance in this competition. Like, what, easily one of the most athletic gay guys we've ever seen on Big Brother. He, despite being, what, 200 pounds at least, manages to stay out there for a long, long time. He eventually goes out in fourth, crying in agony. And this isn't him just being a pussy. This is him actually not physically being able to hold on anymore.
Yeah, this is yet another in a long list of post-endurance comp, can't-get-off-the-tarp performances that we've seen from a lot of people historically, like Natalie in Big Brother 9, I think, had one. Evil Dick after the Big Brother 8 final endurance.
Yeah, but I think this one was actually sincere. Like, Shane... as much as we might not respect Shane as a player, I think his presence in the season is actually a great thing. Like, it makes it a lot more exciting because he's just beating all of these comps, and at the same time, like, he's not doing so in a way which is conducive to his game, so he's just spazzing out all over the place, which makes for chaos in house, which is great for us as viewers.
Yeah, we were talking the other day about this. If you consider the very first competition where the coach got to pick, the winning coach picked HOH and the losing coach kicked someone out, if you consider that a win for Shane, which I would, considering his team won the competition and Brittany just didn't happen to pick him as the HOH, he won five of the first six competitions in the house. The only one he missed was the week two HOH.
Yeah, and even though it may have been strategically correct for him to throw at least one of those, you have to give a bit of respect to a guy who can actually go out there and do that. Like, in on a show where good gameplay is often at a premium, and we don't see it that often, you have to respect a guy who at least takes another aspect of the game and just does it to the greatest extreme.
Yeah, and it's also, like you said, an extremely impressive performance, because if you think back to, think of all the big guys who've won all the endurance competitions in Big Brother history, like Danielle Reyes, Diane Henry, all the animals, like Howie was not doing that great Howie, just for example, not great in endurance, and I think Shane's that same type. Howie, probably, you know, 240, but Shane's certainly not a small guy, and that's a hell of a job by him. And then, of course, Ian, kind of more Matt Hoffman size, sticking in there predictably late at the end. And when we were talking to Matt, both of their endurance competitions that he played came down to he and Reagan, the two small guys, and they both said they could have just stayed up there forever.
Right, so the final three in this competition is Danielle, Brittany, and Ian. And at this point, the inevitable deal-making starts to happen. Now, it's not really that necessary because Danielle and Brittany were aligned to begin with, and Ian, even though he isn't strictly in alliance with them, neither of them have any reason to put him up. He has no reason to put either of them up. So all three of them can be pretty sure that they're safe for the week no matter what happens here. So it's kind of less important who actually wins the competition, although I think Ian definitely wanted to stay in it just like as a sort of exercise to prove something to himself, and also to see pictures of his family or whatever.
Mike Boogie, I think, had gotten him pretty worked up about the idea of really wanting HOH this week.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about why it's correct to throw competitions a lot of the time. I actually think here it's correct for Ian to try his hardest to win, just because, leaving everything else aside, he's someone who doesn't have a lot of respect among everyone else at the moment. Winning this kind of competition is the first step, and a big step, towards getting that kind of respect from everyone, which is going to be crucial if, as he obviously wants, envisions himself ending up in front of the jury.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to win the game, you're going to, at the end of the day, need that kind of at least respect as someone who is out there really playing the game in one aspect or another, be it strategic or physical or social. And I actually agree with you. I think if we want to talk about, because spoiler alert, Danielle ends up winning the HOH. I don't even know if you mentioned that yet.
Yeah.
But Danielle is someone, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but I don't hate, I think if I'm Dan, I'd be telling her, throw this competition, we're fine.
I wouldn't, and again, it's difficult to know how much of this we want to say for the Dan-specific discussion towards the end.
Let's put that a little bit.
Yeah, that's something to bookmark for future reference, at least. I think, if you're Brittany here, it seemed like Brittany threw it at the end to Danielle. I mean, it may be that had it played out organically, Danielle might have won anyway, but Brittany was willing to step off, I think. And I think this was fine for her, because you can be reasonably sure that you can influence Danielle's decisions. You know that she's going to do pretty much what you want, you're aligned with her, but at the same time, Brittany is more likely to win competitions, I think, than Danielle is, and I think if Danielle does end up doing something stupid, then the target goes on her instead of on Brittany.
Okay. I think Brittany, I'm glad Brittany didn't win this HOH. I think Brittany, honestly, and I hate to say this about my girl Brittany, she's bugging the hell out of me this season. I think if she'd gone on from Shane's gone to Shane wins HOH to Brittany wins HOH, she would just become, like, insufferable for a little while. Yeah. And that's not really what I want. Yeah, you know?
Definitely. I think Brittany works best when she is the underdog. When right. her back's up against the wall, she doesn't really know what's going on. Like you said before, it seems like coming in as a returning player with this kind of, with these expectations, with this precedent, with these responsibilities, it ruins any potential you have for just taking the game in its stride. You have to be focused seriously on the game at all times, and that isn't conducive to being able to give like funny DRs or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, she's under way too much pressure right now. Not even pressure of, oh, they brought me back because I'm great in the DR. It's pressure like I got the game to be thinking about now instead of just hanging out with Lane all day.
Yeah, and let's be clear, it's not like we're criticizing her specifically. It's not like, okay, you're in here to give us funny moments in the DR, stop playing the game for yourself. We understand that she has to be focused on the game, but it's just an unfortunate side effect of that we lose what we liked about Brittany to begin with.
Right, it's like Coach in South Pacific, where when he goes deep and has a ton of say, we then lose the coach moments because they have to tell a different story. And right. The result is not yet known about this, but it's not them telling a different story. It's they're getting a different player because now she's actually thinking about the game.
Yeah, and we still saw a bit of that just because Coach is a generally absurd human being, but the point is well taken, I think. I actually also like that Brittany didn't win this because I think Shane is already perceived as the biggest competition threat for good reason. Like he's won five of the past six, effectively, like you said. I think for Brittany to win this would put the same kind of target on her, and it would be very easy for someone to just say, look, I don't want the whole of Janelle's team after me. I don't want the whole of Boogie's team after me. Brittany and Shane are very good competitors. I can just get one of them out of the house right now. Let's put them up. Done deal. It's over.
See, if I'm Brittany, I very much like not winning this competition myself, especially when it's me and Danielle up there. But realistically, even though I'm the coach in the relationship between Brittany and Shane, Shane's going to be the bigger target between the two of us just because he's so damn good in these competitions. And all of the other coaches are going to be bigger targets than me. So I don't see how Brittany's going anywhere for a long time if she just keeps her mouth shut and doesn't win anything.
I agree that if it's Brittany heads up against Shane, then Shane probably goes there. However, as we've seen, not only in previous season, but in this season, like it's not always the case that the lock target is actually a lock to go. Like it's very possible that someone who's forward-thinking, as a lot of these people like Dan and Boogie are, says, okay, well, the other side has already nominated Shane. If we save him here, then he can be a force to be reckoned with to go against the other side to work for us. Like we have no use for Brittany, so why do we care about keeping her around? And secondly, I don't think it's a case of whether Brittany survives against Shane. It's just she doesn't want to be nominated against Shane in the first place, because let's say Shane wins veto, then Brittany's still on the block against somebody else, and it may be that she survives against a new person anyway, but you don't want to be in that position to begin with.
I don't mind being in that position to begin with if I'm Brittany, straight up. I really don't, because I don't. If Shane wins and takes himself off the block, they're not going to put someone to. I'm not going to be the priority. Whoever is HOH is going to have bigger fish to fry than me. They're going to backdoor someone.
I agree with that, but I don't. It's not like you get any advantage from being in the block in that case.
That's true. No, that's totally true, but I'm certainly not terrified of the prospect as I would be if I were, say, Dan, and the prospect was me going up on the block against Danielle, although, of course, with her as head of household, that's not the case. So, Don, do we want to get into now how we think these players are going to stack up now that they are all entered into the game officially as equal players?
Yeah, definitely. Now, how do you want to do this? Do you want to go over them individually first, or do you want to talk about Danielle's prospective HOH reign to begin with?
Let's talk about Danielle's HOH first, because I'm sure that's going to come. I'm sure that's going to come up as we're talking about the other things. So we might as well talk about the general stuff of that first.
Okay. Now, the reason I like Dan, and I obviously normally Danielle won HOH, but let's be honest, it's Dan that's going to be making the decisions this week. The reason I like one person from that group winning, and the reason that if I'm a coach, I want someone from my side winning, is that it seems like with Frank being saved in these kind of weird circumstances, and with these four new coaches entering the game, and it's not just four random players, it's four players who you know are going to make an impact. It seems like this is an entirely new game. Like, the reset button has literally and figuratively been pushed here. And I think, given that, there's going to be this confusion about how the alliance is going to stack up now, and I think whoever is HOH in this first week is going to have a formative role in deciding how that actually stacks up going into future weeks. Which I think if you're someone like Dan who is able to consider all of these scenarios and work out the best plan, that's a tremendous power to have here.
Yeah, I totally agree. The counter argument I would make there is that, like you said, realistically, it's going to be Dan making the calls. And as much as it is nominally Danielle's HOH, everyone's going to know that it's Dan making the calls, so it might as well be Dan.
Still, though, because if you think about what's going to happen here, you're going to have everyone coming to her and him with begging for some sort of deal, trying to extract something from them in return for a safety or whatever. Now, it's like you're going to have people like Will setting out their former coaches. You're going to have people trying to form new deals with people based on events that have happened in the past few weeks. Like, you have the best position of anyone to influence what's going to happen. So if you're well-equipped to decide what should happen, then you're in a position to realize that.
If I'm Dan, honestly, because I think the blood will get on my own hands even if Danielle's the one doing it, I kind of like having me and Danielle out kind of in the abyss, being leaders of the leaders of opinion and kind of stirring the pot socially and being the ones who can vote and kind of dictate how things are going instead of just setting other people up to dictate how things go.
Sure, but
I see what you're saying. I think there's definitely merit to both. And this is the thing. There are going to be pros and cons to winning head of household every time you're the new head of household and you previously had no blood on your hands. Because on one side, you're going to finally get a chance to play and make some moves that you want to do. Like Kaser famously said, if you want something done, win an HOH. However, you're also then going to start getting blood on your hands, which could come back to burn you in the future. So you can, on one hand, be setting up a more favorable path for you, but at the same time, people are going to then be more likely to come after you.
Sure. But I think it's accepted wisdom, and correctly so, that whoever's the first HOH in a game of Big Brother has a big role in deciding how the rest of the season plays out. Even if it's not directly them saying, okay, this is what's going to happen from week 1 to week 14, they have a large part to play in that. And I think this is pretty much the same situation. I think the game's kind of like in two parts, where we've had this first stage where kind of weird things have happened, and now this is effectively a new game, and the first HOH is going to be in a similar position.
Yeah, and by the way, I may not have been clear. I think we both very much like that the coaches have been entered. It was only how they got entered that we took issue with, at least for me, where I love that the coaches are now in the game because I think this adds a ton of complexity to it, and there's going to be a ton of room to play over the course of the next, however long it runs, till the end of the summer. I think we're in for a fantastic season pretty much no matter what the next three or four booths are. I think there's always going to be something worth watching.
Well, okay, I'm going to disagree with that, and I think I'm going to skip ahead to something we plan to discuss later, and that's what I think the implications of this is going to be for the jury. Now, there are 12 people in the game at this point. We assume the jury's going to start at 9 like it usually does. And you have to imagine that in these first 3 weeks, the people who are going to be targeted are going to be some of the most influential players, so people like the coaches or Will or Frank or whoever. Now, that means that going into the end game, we're going to have all these people like Jen and Ashley and Joe, whoever, still there. And if they're in the, it's kind of a catch-22, because if they're in the final two, then that's not good. We don't want them having a shot at the money. And if they're against each other, then that's a disaster because one of them is going to win. At the same time, though, we don't want them on the jury making what we think at least is just a poor, irresponsible, or immature decision.
Yeah, it's weird. And that's why I think, not only from a game theory perspective for all the big threats, but also from, of course, an entertainment perspective, I'd love to see some floaters start going out, which is why if we want to get to what I think the Danielle specifically should be doing, I really like her taking out, and this may sound weird, like a Jen type, and Jen perhaps may even be my choice target here for Danielle, if I'm Dan coaching her, to leave those other big threats in as buffers.
Okay, I like that
idea. Actually, if I can expand on that real quickly. If I can give some reasons here, I think the reason is I want to be taking out someone who, I want to leave in the heavy hitters to keep myself safe for a while, so they always have bigger targets, to bigger fish to fry, really. But I also want to be leaving in some kind of people that I can beat at the end, like Joe, like Ian, like Ashley, for instance, But Jen is someone I think that isn't going to be viewed as a threat, but that could theoretically play very well in an endgame, and that's someone that I'm not interested in keeping around for long, if I'm Danielle.
Okay. I mean, I like that idea. My question would be, firstly, is she going to be able to get away with nominating Jen against somebody else? Like,
no fucking chance.
Yeah. And secondly, even if somehow this match had happened, why would anybody vote out Jen over the other person? Obviously, there's a chance that they use a logic which we've been outlining, repeating over and over, which is keep the biggest threats in as a buffer for yourselves. But that only goes so far, and that's a decision that has to be made by individual people in their minds, and that may not be what collectively is realized by the majority of people that are going to be voting.
Right, and the problem with that is that it's not like Survivor, where you can then do the math on, oh, if this person goes, this is who's going to be left, and these are going to be the numbers, because you can say who's going to be left, but you don't know who's going to be head of household in the coming weeks, and you need to kind of plan around various different combinations of things happening.
Yeah, I think with Survivor, you can make these kind of outlandish plays on the assumption that you can predict, within reason, how the future votes are going to go. With Big Brother, though, there are so many variables that you actually can't do that to any degree of accuracy.
Right. I mean, you can plan out, okay, if things go my way, this is what I want to do, but there's always going to be a case where the wrong person could win HOH, and then you're going to lose someone.
Yeah, and there have been players of Dr. Will or Dan's caliber where they know that no matter what happens in a coming week or whatever, that they're going to be safe and that things are going to go the way they want them to go. But that's very rare. And even with players like that, it's often situational. Like, Dan was in that position for much of the later stage of Big Brother 10, but suddenly wasn't in that position at the beginning.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And yeah, even Dr. Will, like, just dominated most of All Stars, knew exactly what was going to happen, why it was going to happen, when it was going to happen, and yet was taken out in the late game in circumstances not under his control. So it's like this, you can't perfectly map out in the way that you might be able to like to.
No, but I think there is very much a common theme amongst good Big Brother players, which is the idea of free agency, really. Not even free agency, but being able to go either way and having open, like, it's not going to be super outlandish and backstabby if you end up going with one side necessarily over the other. You want to have that kind of room to maneuver where people aren't going to be super butthurt if you're directly, like, screwing over your entire side, which is the whole reason why you don't want sides in the first place. What you don't want is what Janelle seems to love, which is completely divide a house.
Yeah, Janelle, she seems to, if not deliberately, but maybe unintentionally, just polarize the whole house, right? You're either for Janelle or you're against Janelle, and everything that happens eventually revolves around that.
Well, she's been very good at finding people, Howie both times that she played previously. Some people who are willing to kind of just go along with her and never even consider putting her up. Like Kacer, for instance, although Kacer probably come endgame time, not that he ever makes an endgame, he probably has some different ideas. But the idea is people get blindly, like Dom said, for or against Janelle, where she's playing such a game where if things end up going, and this is a justifiable thing, although it much more so in Survivor, like kind of like Boston Rob in Survivor, where it's boom or bust, where if things ultimately end up breaking down her way, she's going to be in a very good position to win because people are going to be wrongly taking her for one reason or another. And if things don't go her way, she's going to be the big target and probably go.
Yeah,
or
sure.
In her case, she's going to win 5 POVs a season and stay around to the final three.
Right. So, okay, so we want to discuss what we think Danielle's going to do and what she should do, and in order to do that, we need to know like what the context is and what's happening on the feeds, that sort of thing. So what seemed to happen last week was that Shane and Danielle obviously had this connection, and then their coaches were kind of included in that by default. They couldn't get out of it even if they wanted to, and they shouldn't want to, given that this is just a natural, like this is a prefactured alliance for them to have here. This is a good thing for them. So we have this alliance between Dan, Brittany, Shane and Danielle, and this seems to have expanded tentatively to include Janelle here, mainly due to the efforts of Dan, who has this kind of side deal with Janelle. They've agreed to work together, and she's being brought into the fold, and it's possible that Ashley's going to be brought in kind of by the same process. And underneath all that, we have this dynamic between the coaches and the newbies, where the coaches, even though they all respect each other as threats, they realize that in the short term, people like Will are going to be agitating to get them out of the game. Even someone like Frank, who is aligned with a coach, is going to be targeting the other coaches before anybody else. So it's in their best interest to stick together in the short term. And it seems like that might happen, although obviously we're going to see whether it does pretty soon. So that's the state of affairs as it stands right now. So what do we make of this?
Yeah, and then with regard to the other coach that hasn't come up, Boogie, he's just been walking around all day on mega tilt, probably accurately. Okay, yeah, let's get right into it. And I think the place I want to start is with the coaches, because, of course, now they're the ones who are just for the first time entering the game as actual players. And if you're okay with that, I think the person to start with is Boogie, because I think he's in decidedly the worst position of the coaches this week, of course, as all three of the other coaches seem to want to be working together for this week and targeting what probably will come down to Boogie and Frank, although now I'm hearing on Twitter Will's name's getting thrown around, Joe's name's getting thrown around, so I'm not even entirely sure what the latest is.
Okay, well, I think the thing with Will is that he is publicly split from Janelle. That is a thing now. There's no hope of that rift being repaired, at least not in the time period which it would take before nominations to happen.
Right.
So Will has been trying to rally votes against the coaches, and the coaches, understandably, are not very impressed by this. And so they're all trying to pressure Daniel into putting him up against Frank, who they want gone anyway.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't hate that. That's fine, I think, if you're one of the coaches. As long as you're keeping some of the bigger threats. Because like you said, you can't keep all the big threats in forever, because they're big threats for a reason. They're going to be able to beat you at certain things, and some of them are probably going to be able to win jury votes. So you do need to methodically start picking them off. And there are quite a few threats left in the game. I would say all of the coaches, with the exception of Brittany, would be perceived as like stud threats. And I think Frank and Shane are both on that same level. So this is actually a time where I'm okay with really setting the game in motion and taking out someone like Frank if you're in Dan's position.
Yeah, I think given that everyone expected Frank to leave this week, anyone who isn't in Boogie's team can put up Frank as a kind of default nomination and expect to get away with it. Not get away with it because there's nothing to get away with, but no one's going to complain if you put up Frank here.
Yeah, what do you think about the idea of putting him up against Mike Boogie specifically?
I like that because it forces Frank and Boogie to turn against each other, and the fallout of that could be interesting because, for instance, now Ian and Jen have to pick between Frank and Boogie, and the decision that they make there is going to be revealing, potentially, about where their true loyalties lie. So I kind of like that. However, there is a worry that Mike Boogie, who seems to be acting pretty emotionally right now, he nonetheless is very skilled at the game, and he could potentially turn things around and make something weird happen.
Yeah, oh, of course. It's never a sure thing with Mike Boogie on the block.
The counter-argument to that, though, is that he's going to do that if Frank is on the block no matter what, and you probably have to put up Frank. So if you're going to do that, you may as well go the whole way and put Boogie up as well.
Now that I'm actually thinking about it, is Mike Boogie 0-for-1 on Thursday nights? Has he ever sat on an eviction chair and not been voted out on Thursday? I'm pretty sure he's, because he won, I don't think he was ever even nominated on Thursday in All-Stars. The only time he was ever even nominated in the first place, he won veto. But I can think, I may be wrong. So maybe there is more of a shift. Boogie's just never been nominated, apart from the time he went in Big Brother 2 and then won veto in All-Stars.
Yeah,
your point remains the same, which is, Boogie is, of course, he's a very big capable player, which is why he's not nominated that often. But if Will very famously managed to get nominated several times both seasons and never get evicted until the very end in Big Brother All-Stars.
Yeah, it seems that Dan and Boogie have this tacit agreement to work together as well. But I think at this point, Dan has his finger in so many pies that he can basically choose what he wants to do. Like, he's not, whatever he chooses, he's going to be losing an ally in one sense. So, but that's not negative, because everyone else is also his ally as well. Which is why I think, if we want to move on to this quickly, I think Dan is in the best position in this game right now, and it's not even close. Like, I would take Dan against the majority of the field, quite happily.
Wow, that's interesting. Oh, well, let's get right into Dan.
Well, yeah, because if you remember, I said to you off-air like a week ago, before Dan had entered the game, I thought Dan had the best equity to win. And
this is true.
This is when it wasn't even a certainty that he was going to be in the game at all, just because, I mean, we're seeing why this week. I mean, the best way to explain it is just to look at what's happening. Like,
right,
Dan,
before he's entered, if he gets to enter, he's going to have such a big percentage of equity that, and given the likelihood that he's going to get to enter, 2 weeks ago he's been the favorite, even though he wasn't playing.
Yeah, it's it's just absurd to think about when you frame it in those terms, because he was in, it's a certainly very bad position at the beginning of this game, and now it seems like he controls what's going to happen now at the most important HOH for quite a long time. He's going to be able to influence things in such a way that he's not going to be the immediate target in the short term, no matter who wins HOH, like, unless it's some weird combination, unless some very weird things happen. And I don't know, he's Dan, he's going to be able to exercise the skills that we all know he has in the ways that he used them before, and possibly with the same results.
Well, so what do we think about the idea? I think that then either gives more credibility to the idea of Frank pitting Frank against Boogie, or pit two teams against each other. And that would probably be in the form of, like, Will and Frank, where when you're Dan, you want to be thinking about at HOH at this point, kind of like how when they were talking about it early, very early this season, they said the goal of a week one HOH is get someone out and then don't get as little blood on your hands as possible. And like we mentioned before, this is basically a week one HOH all over again with just a ton of meta coming in, where you're really, this is a critical inflection point in the game where you're going to really set the pace for what happens. And the, certainly the goal there is getting out of all of this, with as little blood on your hands as possible. I think, cause the entire idea, I think, to a lot of people is very counterintuitive to not want HOH, cause people say, oh, it's HOH, you're guaranteed safety. You get to individually pick who goes up. You get, if someone wins veto, you get to pick the veto. People listen to you. But the whole point is you don't want that because of the residual effects of HOH is you've now screwed people over. And in many cases, there aren't going to be any good results in the next HOH competition because you're going to be a target no matter who wins because of what you just did as HOH.
Right. And I think Dan is in the kind of opposite position of that where he, no matter what he does, I think he's going to come out of it spraying like roses.
Yeah, oh, it's... I'm struggling to even think of a pair of nominees you can make here where people aren't then going to still have bigger fish to fry the next week.
Yeah, going back to what you said just now, I don't think nominating Will and Frank would be putting two teams against each other, because I think it is the case that Will and Frank are lying.
Oh, Joe and Frank, I'm sorry.
Okay, Joe and Frank. Well, Frank has been talking on the feeds a lot about what he would do if he wins HOH, and that consists mainly of putting up Dan and somebody else. Like, he wants Dan and Janelle out of the game as soon as possible. So
yeah, I saw actually earlier Frank was saying this? Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's coming. I saw someone say in conversation that Frank was coming after Dan, yeah.
Yeah, and even if you're Dan, even if you can't know this, you have to at least expect it. Like, Frank is someone who is not afraid to come after a player like Dan, especially when Boogie's in his ear telling him to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's... if we can briefly get back to Boogie, what do you think, if you're Boogie right here, what are you doing?
I'm probably doing what he's doing, which is going around on Megatilt wondering where everything went wrong.
Might this be a design play to make people think, oh, Boogie's going to be super pissed, he's not going to recover in time, we should keep him in and take out someone like, for instance, Frank, who has motivation and will stay positive when things aren't going well?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that, because on one of the updates from Jokers, and this is one update, so it's not representative of everything, like, this is a narrow snippet of conversation. Dan was saying that it seemed like Boogie didn't want to be in the game anymore, and if that's the case, let him stay in. Like, if he doesn't want to be here, great, one less person I have to compete against.
Yeah. Oh, and I also wanted to... Yeah, go ahead.
And yeah, sure, it's Boogie, but if it's not Boogie playing at his best, then who cares? Like, it's not as threatening as it would be if it's Mike Boogie playing in full focus mode.
Yeah, and Big Brother fans will know that Mike Boogie, when acting under his own volition, at least historically, without Dr. Will there, has been known to fly off the rocker and get emotional. Like, in Big Brother 2, when he was first nominated, it suddenly occurred to him, oh, maybe winning HOH to week one wasn't the call, and, I think Boogie is some, or like when Will got evicted in Big Brother All-Stars, he walked around just pouting the whole time. And granted, that may have ended up getting the fire back in his belly, but at least for the time being, a deflated Boogie is certainly something worth doing, because especially I think if he's walking around being a dick to everyone, which is according to at least the live feed updates, which is relatively close to the situation, that's alright with me for now, which is why I'm thinking perhaps this is an act on Boogie's part, and not a bad one if it is.
Yeah, maybe. It's definitely within his range to act like that, so it wouldn't surprise me at all.
But yeah, it's also within his range to act like that organically, so very nice, well-balanced range, Boogie.
True.
All right, so can we talk about Janelle? What are you thinking about right now if you're Janelle?
Okay, I don't think Janelle is in a bad position as it might seem that she is. Like, I don't think she's going to be an immediate target for many people. However, I think she is drawing dead to win this game.
Wow. Okay. I'll tell you now, I'm going to contend that point, but why do you say that?
I'm exaggerating, of course. I don't think she's literally drawing dead, but I think she has a very slim chance. And the reason is, everyone has seen what she can do, so even people who would want to be allied with her anyway, like, however good her social skills are, that's going to be overridden in other people's minds by the need to get her out before she can start just crushing every competition.
Yeah, and I also think it doesn't bode well for her. First of all, I certainly don't agree that she's anywhere near dead to win, but I do think it doesn't bode well for her that her perception is it's her and then kind of her two mindless lackeys, Joe and Ashley, who are, at least to this point, kind of going along with everything she said. When you're Dan, you are aware, because you're currently doing it yourself, how powerful a strong player with several weak but obedient players is.
Right. And the thing with Janelle is, I could buy the argument that she's in a fine spot if her social scores were actually up to par, but she seems like the type of person who is only good socially with the people she's aligned with. So, like, everyone she isn't aligned with at any point hates her more than they hate just your average person who happens to be their opponent.
Yeah, I can see that. I certainly, historically, there's been some validity to back up that statement. And I think Janelle, honestly, if I'm in Dan's position, I don't even hate nominating Janelle herself and getting her out. For that reason, I think she should be very worried right now this week, even though perhaps she's not. But more to the point, I think, if I can defend her in terms of her long-term odds of winning, she's doing what she's done before, and in her defense, she probably would have won both times that she got there, had she gotten there. And she was a competition away from getting there both times, with this exact same formula. Oh, sorry, just dropped my lighter. With this exact same formula, it's kind of like, if Boston Rob plays again and starts doing his same standard, get five or six people together, and then start block voting, and if it works out, it works out. That's fine with me, and I think because he's seen that it can work when it does work, and that's his game, and I think this is Janelle's style of play.
Watching the two of them on the FISA, it seems though that they generally like each other, or at least what's important is that Janelle generally likes Dan, and I think it's entirely plausible that we could see Dan doing to Janelle exactly what Will did to her in Big Brother All-Stars, minus the kind of sexual chemistry, where he just mind fucks into doing whatever he wants her to do without her even realizing it. And what's even sicker about it is that he'll be able to do that despite it already having been done to her before by someone who's seen to be in the same class as Dan.
Yeah, it'd be pretty impressive if you could literally follow and do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and I think this is the cornerstone of the argument for why Dan is the greatest of all time for the people who make that argument, which is that his gameplay is a kind that would work with any kind of cast, whereas I think Will can come off as very kind of slimy or disingenuous sometimes, almost too slick for his own good.
See, I think Will is a level above that. I think that's more. I think Will, it's very, very face up. Will is an arrogant guy who is very confident and knows that he has many different abilities, I guess. But people really don't seem to care. I don't know what more we need to see out of Will Kirby acting the way he does. Because, of course, I agree, on paper, this shouldn't be that effective, but it clearly works against a wide range of skills of players with various ranges of skills.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I'm Dan here, and it's weird how you asked me about Janelle, and immediately the conversation comes back to Dan, but I think there's a good reason for that, which is Dan is in the best position right now to do whatever he wants to do, and one of the things he might want to do is pit Janelle and Boogie against each other, given the metagame that he knows exists there.
What would you think if he put up literally Janelle against Boogie? How amazing would that be? Would that be could it possibly be the best week we've seen so far?
I would love it. My worry about that strategically for Dan would be that putting the two of them up against each other might, in a weird way, work to unify them. Like, at that point, it'd be very clear that Dan is not on either of their sides, and whichever one of them survives, that would probably would have to come after him. So
yeah, no, I totally don't think it's a very good plan, but I think it would be a fun plan to watch play out.
Oh,
again, for the same reason you mentioned, because then we have whichever one survives is then in a battle with Dan. It's battle after battle. It's fantastic.
Yeah, if I was Dan and the producer told me, look, we're not going to allow you to win the game, you're just here to have some fun, this is exactly the kind of thing I would be doing, just putting up Janelle and Boogie and having them go against each other, and then sitting back with popcorn and watching from a distance.
Yeah, so let's move on now. What do you think about Brittany? How's she standing right here?
I don't know. The thing with Brittany is that, and this pertains to all the coaches in general, I don't think that the coaches are going to have an easy time winning a jury vote on their own merits. I think if they do win, it's going to be because their opponent is so widely disliked that the jurors just can't bring themselves to vote for that person instead.
Would you have said the same thing about Rachel entering last season? And would you have qualified Portia as someone who probably would beat Rachel if it came down to it?
I would not, but I think that's a good example, actually, because it came down to the final jury voting mirrored the way that the whole game had went down, which was it was returnees versus newbies, and that was a pattern all the way until the end. And Rachel got every single returnee vote, plus Shelley, who was essentially up Jeff and Jordan's ass, and then Portia got all the other newbie votes. And I can see something similar happening here, where the newbies are going to kind of band together and vote for one of their own, whereas the coaches might respect one of their own's games more than anyone else might.
That's interesting, because I feel like, I think Dan auto-wins any finals he gets to, first of all. I don't think there's a chance Dan loses if he makes the finals.
I mean, I agree with that, but I think that Dan is so good socially that it overrides what I'm saying here. The problem with Brittany is that I think, as much as we love her kind of psychopathic personality or whatever, it can be grating for a lot of people, particularly when it comes down to jury voting. And so I can see Brittany having a tough time when it comes to jury votes anyway, even leaving aside the fact that she's now a returnee in a field of people who are presumably going to be pissed that their games are ended by someone who's had this second chance.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's pretty clear to people who listen, we really like Brittany in the diary room, but perhaps not someone I would invest in as a player.
Yeah, like, if we think back to Redemption Island, like, Boston Rob plays one of the most dominating games of all time and does it, to all accounts, by being pretty likable in the process. Like, he wasn't actively offending anyone. I think people respected his accomplishment. And yet, had he been against any combination of people other than the two specific people he was with, he probably would have lost. And if you think that would happen to him, with a jury which, on balance, seemed like one of the more rational juries, think about how hard a time Brittany's going to have convincing a jury of angry newbies who have never seen a show before to vote for her.
Yeah, I agree. Although I do think, this is, again, not at all related, I think Boston Rob beats more combinations than he gets credit for from people who are trying to glorify how exact that combination had to be and how well executed it was. But nonetheless, I think you're right about the general point. And like, kind of like we saw with Stephanie LaGrossa in Guatemala, where yeah. She can easily make the end and still lose because people just don't like her. And perhaps even go so far as to resent her as a returning player, which wasn't the case with people liked Stephanie for returning. She was just a...
Yeah, I don't think that parallel is quite exact because I don't think Brittany's going to have all the blood in her hands all the time. Like, she's not going to be making all these big moves to get people out or whatever. But I think that's not going to work to her advantage because if you're faced with this problem where people are naturally disinclined to vote for you, you want to give them a reason to say, look, you may not like me, but you have to respect the game that I played. And if you can't make that argument, what other argument are you going to make if you're someone like Brittany?
That's the thing, and we see this come up all the time with people probably like Kim or like Danielle Reyes, where the basic thing is, I just got to get to the end, and if these people are going to vote for the best player, they're going to vote for me, and if not, I can't win it anyway, so it doesn't really matter how I get to the end.
Right. I think if the season were an all-star season, or if this metagame with Brittany didn't exist, and you just put her in a random season, I think we would be saying the same kind of things, like, she's going to have trouble winning a jury vote or whatever. These problems are all there, but they're exacerbated by other factors. So I think, given all of that, she's going to have a pretty hard time winning, even if she does make it to the end. And I don't think her path there is going to be very smooth.
Yeah, I think Brittany would have had a hard time winning her original season. Honestly, I think she beats... Does she beat Enzo, even? She loses it. She gets killed by Aiden. She loses to Lane. She probably beats... Who does she beat? Does she lose to Reagan?
Probably. I wish we'd asked Matt that, actually.
That's a good, yeah.
Looking back, but... Yeah, I mean... Well, I think you're raising a good point, which is that Brittany, from that perspective, is in this really awkward position where she has this disadvantage from being a returning player, but she doesn't have the respect from being a returning player with the reputation of Dan or Boogie or Janelle that would actually lead her to maybe, that would act as a counteracting influence against that problem for her.
Right, yeah, that's what I mean. To a much more extreme degree with Dan than Janelle, where Dan, like I said, I think is auto-winning anytime he makes the finals, no matter who he's against. And I think Janelle is in honestly very good shape, and I really don't think I agree with the people who say that the newbies aren't going to want to vote for her and that the coaches are going to be the only ones who want to vote for her. I think it's certainly well within the realm of possibility that, like, her ideal endgame, honestly, is basically the endgame she set up, where she's the leader of this alliance of relatively dumb people, and she bangs off competitions, and they one by one get put onto the jury, and then if she can win the final HOH, she gets all of their jury votes. And so, I think if she gets there with coaches, and then if she can also bring Joe and Ashley, I could see Ian voting for her over several people. I certainly don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Janelle gets a lot of jury sway because of her status as a returning player. But I think the overall point that I've been trying to make and keep spacing on is Brittany does not have that same status where people are going to default to voting for her.
Even if Brittany does manage to kick it up a notch and play this incredibly impressive game, I don't think people are going to give her enough credit for that. That depends on who she's up against, I think. But no matter what, I think that she is going to be underestimated if she plays a great game, fairly estimated if she plays a poor game, and that's not a great position to be in.
No. So do you want to move on and talk about the new players now? I think a decent place to start now is with Brittany's closest ally, Shane. What do you think about Shane now?
Shane. I think Shane wins most final two combinations for sure. But I think he seems to be reasonably well liked within the house. Even people who are his opponents within the game, such as Frank, happen to respect him quite a bit. And I think even if they don't like him on a personal level, which most of them do, they're going to have to respect the fact that he is just crushing every single competition. I think that any path that leads to Shane being in the final two involves him crushing even more competitions down the line.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think Brittany is probably going to be at this point, it seems. Maybe Danielle might take him to the end. Who knows how that's going to go. And I think, like we said before, I think he probably even beats Brittany at the end.
I don't think it's a case of even beating Brittany. I think it's a case of he beats Brittany.
Right, yeah. Well, that, my point is, I think with the exception of Dan, Shane beats anyone in a final two. At least as things stand now. And I really don't think Shane's the type to wreck his relationships with people. If Shane gets to the end game, like you've been saying, it's because he's won a lot of competitions.
Yeah. So, how big a target do we see him being in the short term? Like, he's obviously safe this week, but assuming the worst case scenario for him next week, how likely is he to be put up? And I guess, what is that worst case scenario? Who is going to be putting him up?
Janelle probably. Will might be putting him up. I don't know. I guess Will's going after Janelle. It's an interesting question. I don't know, because I was thinking as we were talking earlier, and I didn't want to interrupt you because you were in the middle of something. Shane's actually in a good position, I think, entering next week for the most. It's fascinating because he was in such a bad position a couple weeks ago.
Well, this is why we keep coming back to this point of keeping these buffs in the game, because when you drop in Dan and Boogie and Janelle, suddenly nobody cares about you as much anymore. Because, look, if Frank wins HOH, he has said his primary target is Dan, not Shane, who put him up last week and came this close to getting him evicted. His primary target is Dan. I mean, that's fantastic for Shane. Like, the person who has most reason to want him gone doesn't even want him gone quite yet.
Yeah, that's why I was saying I think the best over the past couple of weeks, that's why we've hit on it so many times, is that it's correct for at this stage for the bigger threats to want to keep the bigger threats in.
Yeah, and even, say, Will and Janelle are probably going to be going after each other instead of going after Shane. And
it's fantastic. Like, who is putting up Shane if they win next week?
Obviously, if Shane wins, he's safe. If Brittany wins, he's safe. If Dan wins, he's probably safe, although Dan is presumably going to throw that competition. But it seems like maybe Ian, Jen, possibly, like Joe or Ashley. But again, like, it's difficult to see a scenario which leads to him being nominated next week. And that's a pretty weird thing to say, given how the first 3 weeks of this game have gone.
That's a ridiculous thing to say, given that he's what, just given how good he is in these competitions, for there to be so many people left, and for not to, and given how much power he's had and how much blood he could have, like how much influence over the way things have played out he's had, and for to have so few people have him anywhere near the top of their, or I'm sure he's near the top of most people's hit list, but not to be at the top of most people's hit list is pretty remarkable. And I want to say, I'm not so sure it was all by design. I think he's gotten very lucky to be in such a good position, but he's certainly not done anything to completely screw it up, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think...
Frank, I would say, is screwing it up, but it ended up working out for him.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, he's... I think going down the line, he's not the kind of person who socially is going to get in fights with people. He's not going to have anything apart from game dynamics mix anything up.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of a good parallel here other than Janelle and Allstars. I think he's going to be the kind of guy who is strung along by players like Dan for a bit just because they know that they can always point to him as a threat when they need to, but they're going to cut him loose before his going on and on in competitions becomes a serious threat. So probably sometime around like final eight, final seven maybe?
That's what I was about. Yeah, I think final eight through six. What about like Hardy? Although I don't think many people were necessarily gunning for Hardy.
I can see that. Obviously, comparing to someone who was on the show 10 years ago is kind of a stretch no matter who it is, but I see where you're going with it.
But the same idea, where everyone identifies, oh, this is the super nice guy who's also a big threat in competition. What Hardy win, like four HOHs?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good comparison. Okay, do we want to move on to Frank then?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think about Frank's position?
Frank's in a very good position, considering where the position he should be after Thursday night, which is not in the Big Brother house.
Admittedly, though, that's not a big bar to clear.
Yeah. Of course, Frank's position is nowhere near as good as Shane's position, I would say. But, of course, because Danielle's in power this week, and Shane is quite literally in bed with Danielle many hours a day. Whereas Frank is not, and Frank is someone that clearly people view as a big target, and also someone who... correctly or incorrectly, and maybe this will change now that the game dynamics have changed, but correct one way or the other, I am at least of the opinion, was going to be voted out at this last week. I don't even think there's much question about that. I think there was enough discussion about, oh, we want to just completely blindside Frank and Boogie with our votes and just completely mislead them and string them along all week. So Frank's position, I think, is certainly precarious, to say the least, right now. But if he can stick around for a little while, I think he could find himself back in decent shape and potentially could find himself a nice end game. But it's going to take a lot, and it's going to take a lot of good fortune.
And that sounds like kind of a flippant thing to say, like, well, if Frank doesn't get voted out, then that's good for him. But, I mean, that is the position he's in at the moment, where he's probably going to be nominated by Shane this week, and he's probably going to have to win the veto unless if he's up against Boogie. I'm not sure how a vote... between him and Will would go, although I have to imagine Will survives there. Just because I think when the game's been shaken up to this degree, people, their natural inclination is to go to the safe option, and the safe option is to go with what they were planning to do last week, which is vote out Frank.
Well, I think him being up against Will might be the best case scenario this week if Janelle does in fact get in good with the Dan, Danielle, Brittany, Shane alliance. And then she herself wants Will out and then has sway over Joe and Ashley and perhaps can Dan may talk himself into wanting to keep the big target Frank still in the house. I could see him perhaps surviving a vote against Will, perhaps surviving a vote against Boogie. I don't see how he survives given how we've seen things play out against many other people.
Yeah, I think if he... it was kind of awkward for him that Danielle won this week or that anyone from that group won. I think... But then again, like, let's say Janelle wins had won HOH. She probably goes after Frank, and same thing with Joe and Ashley. Like, they are a pack of deal. Like, if Janelle would do one thing, Joe and Ashley would probably do the same thing. So either Frank is in a pretty good position if Janelle doesn't want to nominate him, or in a very bad position if she does, given that everyone else is going to go along with her.
Yeah, and just going back, that's kind of why I was saying I think Janelle is in a very has a very visible target on her, because she has her harem of goats.
Yeah, and so I think Frank really needed one of his own team to win HOH this week. And I think, like we said earlier, one of the main hang-ups that people seem to have about him is the fact that they don't trust Boogie, and probably correctly. So, I mean, if I'm
probably.
Frank here... Well, and the problem for Frank is that I think Boogie is the ideal person for him to go deep in the game with, because I think he probably beats Boogie in the final two, and I think Boogie realizes that his best chance is probably against Frank, unless he's against like Jen or someone. But you know, Frank can work to counteract that later. So Frank's best chance of winning is probably to have Boogie in the late game with him. But if Boogie is in the game with him, he's going to have a difficult time surviving any round at which someone outside Frank and Boogie's team wins HOH.
Yeah, I think if we want to look way down the line with both Frank and Boogie, they both want to have each other in there for a long time. So Frank can say, once they get down to Final Five, Final Four, whoever is up for voting, whoever's going to be doing the voting, Boogie can point at Frank and say, oh, this guy's going to win if you let him get to the end. And Frank can point at Boogie and say, what are you doing? This guy won Big Brother All-Stars. He's clearly a very capable player. He knows how to win this game. You've got to take him out. And they both kind of, because with any other players, they're going to have a really hard time selling to, because whoever's realistically going to be voting is going to have a bias one way or the other. And what they really need is for it to be them and probably Ian or Jen.
Right. And coming to us live is confirmation from Twitter that Danielle has in fact nominated Frank and Will. So.
Oh, wow.
And Boogie, yeah, and Boogie is convinced that he's getting backdoored, which, good read by Boogie, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I think, those are, like I said, very strong nominations, I think. And I can honestly see that going either way. I really don't know yet. And it's gonna take, I think the POV is going to be, and I can't believe I'm saying this given what we've already seen so far. This is gonna be one of the most hotly contested POVs that we've seen all season, and who gets picked to play POV is gonna come in big here, I think.
Right, and one thing which we need to provide context is that apparently Will told Danielle that he was happy with going up against Frank, like if that was what was going to happen. Obviously, he doesn't want to be nominated just randomly, like in the dark, but specifically against Frank, he was fine because he was confident that he would get the votes.
That's interesting. So he knew, do we know that he knew he was going up before this?
I'm not sure if he knew, but I think it might have been a ploy on his part, like, if he was confident that Danielle was going to nominate him anyway, then if he goes out to her and says, look, I'm happy with you doing this, then it makes her think that, okay, I can do this anyway, but maybe my target should be Frank instead her target was Will to begin with.
Okay, that's interesting. So like basically saying, I'm fine with going up because I'm not going to go if you make these nominations, indicating to her, oh, maybe I'm missing something and Frank should be the one that I want out, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not necessarily, but it's like, if you think that she's going to put you up no matter what, then if you make it look to her like you're okay with that and that it's a cooperative move, then it makes, she doesn't have a reason to think, oh shit, I put Will up. If he's still in the game next week, he's coming after me. Like,
oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually.
Okay. I mean, I'm not sure if that move is something that Will is capable of, but I don't know.
I really like that. All right, so do we want to talk about Will a bit more in depth now that we're onto this?
Yeah, okay.
If there's anything even more, what do you think about Will just in general? I guess the big question, how do you think Will can go about winning this game? What do you think his priorities should be to try to set a plan in motion?
I think his best chance was to go up against either Joe or Ashley, and that's kind of awkward now that he broke away from the team that included Joe and Ashley.
Yeah, that is a bit awkward, especially when you consider that if it doesn't work out, but he's trying to make it work out, they may not be voting for him at the end if he does get there.
Yeah, I think I might have said Jen there instead. I think he probably wins against Jen as well, just because the perception of Jen seems to be that, sure, she's a nice person, but she's not doing anything.
I think that all depends on how his relationship with Janelle ends up playing out, assuming right. Janelle ends up in that jury.
But as we've seen, and not to sidetrack too much into the Jen discussion, we've seen with jury votes both in Survivor and in Big Brother that it's not just about who's well-liked, but about who's respected. And I think people have a hard time saying, okay, great, Jen won my season by doing what exactly? It's like...
See, I disagree with that. I think everyone likes Jen. And I guess, actually, if we want to close up Will and go to Jen, I think Will has some work to do. He's kind of somewhere in the middle of the pack right now in terms of both influence and perception as a threat. If he can get through a couple weeks here, he should be all right. I really think he should be trying to now work on his relationships with people and really setting up trusting relationships so he can have some kind of lifelines going through for his middle game.
Yeah, okay.
He's someone where I honestly don't mind playing it by ear if you're in Will's position, where take what the house gives you, kind of like Dan early in Big Brother Town.
Yeah, but he's doing exactly the opposite of that at the moment, where He's actively putting himself out there as, okay, this is how I'm playing the game, and the other players in the game are essentially forced to take a stance on that. Right? That either they're with the anti-coaching mentality or they don't agree with it. And by putting himself and by forcing people to take a stance on that, he's only drawing attention to himself in a negative light.
Right, and yeah, it's again worth repeating that generally speaking, polarizing moves are not the call in Big Brother.
Yeah. So, I mean, do we want to talk any more about Will? I think discussion about him is kind of pointless because, like, it doesn't make sense to say, okay, what's this complicated strategy that he can pull off to win the game here? Because I just don't think he's the type of player who's going to go, who can conceive of or execute a strategy like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the same roughly could be said for both Joe and Ashley. I think they have a lot of work to be doing before we really even start discussing them as big-time contenders.
Yeah, I think this pool of players, including Jen, Joe, and Ashley, and maybe Will, though I don't think he's in there, they have to be up against each other to win, and it's difficult to see how they could ever come together and engineer that.
Okay, well, let's get right into Jen then, because I disagree, and then we'll talk about Ian last. I disagree strongly about Jen, and Jen's someone that I have had a high opinion of throughout, and I will certainly grant that Jen has not been great on TV thus far, and has not been, probably because she hasn't been that visible on TV, and not even so much visible on the live feeds either. But I don't hate that. And we're what, not even a month into the game so far? You just kind of got to be laying low. Just get into that middle of the pack, feel people out, get good relationships with people, stay out of trouble, don't get blood on your hands. And I feel like that's exactly what she's done so far. And I think Jen is going to be someone we are almost certainly going to be seeing in the end game. And I think when she gets there, it's not going to be super exciting, but I think she's going to be in fine shape to win. And she's someone that I think has a pretty decent equity for the new players. And on one level, it's frustrating because she certainly isn't playing the game to the full to the degree that I would like to be seeing the eventual winner play it through this point. But and by that same token, I think because of that, she's in a good position to win. And I'm hoping that we get to see her turn it on. And I think whether or not she does end up turning it on, she's still going to be fine and she's still going to be there very deep, if not in the final two. And I think if she makes the final two, she's cool as hell as far as I can tell. She's not flipping out on people, and I think she's fine to win. I think she's a totally fine pick to win in my mind.
Okay, so am I supposed to infer from that you think the end game's going to be composed mainly of these tag-alongs, so people like Jen and Joe and Ashley, and so that all the strong players are going to go after each other in the mid-game, and that we're going to be left with this weird situation at the end?
I think two of the following three players are almost certainly always going to be in the final four. Danielle, Jen and Ashley. I think two of them are all. I don't know that all three are going to make it that often, but I think two of them are almost always going to be there.
Yeah, when we talk about Danielle, something we didn't mention is I don't think she's very likely to win a jury vote either. Like, she doesn't seem well liked or respected at all. I mean,
she's not a good speaker either, which comes in. She's a Southern belle is what she is. But when you handle yourself that way in this context, it's not something that instills a lot of desire to be voted for at the end. It's kind of like beauty pageant answer. Like Amanda Kimmel is someone like that, not to the same degree. I think this is, Danielle's much more Southern, and this may be a reference lost on you because it's in the United States. Danielle's someone, it's hard to find many reasons to vote for Danielle. The main reason I think most people would vote for Danielle is if they don't like who she's next to.
I don't like the Amanda comparison because I think with Amanda, the reason people resent her is that they see that she's just trying so hard to be inoffensive. With Danielle, though, I think she just, her personality is offensive to a lot of people.
Is or is not?
Is.
Is offensive?
Yeah.
How so?
I think she could easily rub a lot of people the wrong way. Like she.
Oh, I agree. Some of the stuff, like, if her conversation about, I think it was Will coming out or whatever, talking about how he's completely changed her views and how she would be, oh no, it's about Jen, I'm sorry, about how Jen's completely changed her views on lesbians and how she'd almost now be comfortable hanging out with lesbians, like, which she never thought was possible. I think stuff like that, and it's not to be forgotten, this girl's 23 years old and hasn't probably seen too much, as far as the real, I mean, not that we necessarily even have, but it's hard to, I guess the underlying point is, it's very hard to find many reasons, like, it's hard to say, I want to vote for Danielle for this reason, and I think you're right that, because of her kind of naivete, she could come across, I wouldn't say offensive, but kind of clueless and not so much worth voting for. If they, and hopefully that doesn't have too negative connotations, because I don't think it's going to be out of spite. It's going to be just, what's Danielle really done? Like, give me a break. This is just some dumb girl.
Yeah, I think if she were to win somehow, it would be that she's perceived as the lesser of two evils.
Kind of like, I think Jordan is a much stronger social player than she was, and also Jordan was sitting next to Natalie Martinez. But I think that's one comparison, because Jordan's probably someone who strikes me as the same way.
Yeah, possibly. I think Jordan was able to pull it off a lot better, though. I don't...
Yeah, no, I don't disagree at all with that. I think Jordan, not so much any kind of conscious effort, but Jordan has a ton of equity in a random Big Brother season, because her just natural personality is much lends itself much better to the game than almost anyone, and certainly more so than Danielle. Because we see a ton of Southern girls come on, and not all of them, certainly also not all of them have the kind of producer interference that Jordan has been the beneficiary from, but they also still don't have the social skills where people still like Jordan and want to vote for Jordan, I think, in certain cases.
Yeah, on my notes here, I've written down that we need to talk about whether we thought Danielle should have thrown the HOH, but I think it's worth making the point that Danielle, it seems, isn't someone who would seriously entertain the idea of throwing HOH. Like, when we've seen these conversations between her and Dan's explaining to her why it might be correct for her to do this, either she doesn't understand it, or she just refuses to accept the logic. I think she's the type of person who we see a lot who seems to think that competition is everything, that they want to be seen as a competitor, and that they just want to try their hardest in everything no matter what, and as if it's somehow demeaning to them to not do that.
These people blow my mind. Like, the Rachel Rileys of the world, where I can never stand the excuse from, not so much excuse, but the line, I'm just a competitor, I just had to try, you know, I'm just such a competitive person. You're playing, good, fantastic, you're playing a game. This competition is part of that game. In this instance, the correct move, if you want to win that game that you're competing in, would be to not win this particular competition. And to me, that strikes me as, like, a fundamental misunderstanding of the game with that type of person, which I think Danielle certainly is. And to speak to your point, when Dan's bouncing ideas about throwing HOH to her, she doesn't understand why. She doesn't understand that in the long run that's a good move, when she could otherwise, if she wins HOH, guarantee safety and have a lot of power. So I want to talk about Ian still, but what else do we have to talk about before we do that?
Nothing. Okay.
Okay, well, let's get right into that, because Ian, this is something we meant to talk about last week and then completely forgot to get to it, where when Dr. Will came back on the show and picked Ian as his winner, we both said we were totally in love with that pick. And Dom, do you want to get into why you think so?
Yeah, so we said we both agreed with him, but we never really explained why that was. We kind of left it for later and then forgot about it. So it's worth coming back to here. The reason I thought at that time, and I don't think that's changed at all, is that if you think about who's going to have a reason to nominate Ian for anything, it's difficult to come up with when that would happen and who that would be. Because,
even more difficult than that is finding a majority of people with incentive to boot him for anything. Like, the real way it would happen is if he just somehow, like, creeps people out to such an absurd extent. But there's no real motive, at least that we've seen thus far within the game, for people to really want him out. And I don't even think that changes too much if he wins an HOH and does some very work.
Yeah, so I think if what happens is that all the strong players come after each other and they just keep falling like dominoes, so they just keep going one by one, then we're going to be left with an endgame full of people like Jen and Ashley and Joe, probably with Ian there as well. But unlike them, Ian has this awareness of the game to be able to position himself in such a way that he's going to be able to get to the final two with one of them, and with one of them who we assume he can beat. I think if you had to do a pop quiz on the strategy of the game, Ian would score very highly, higher than pretty much anyone who's played the game before, with the exception of some very intelligent people who would just figure it out naturally. The problem is that he has difficulty acting on that just because of his social anxiety and the fact that within the rules of the game, he just hasn't had a chance to do that yet. I think as we get closer to the end game, as he becomes more confident in his position, as he realizes that, okay, look, I've gone deep in Big Brother, I've outlasted a lot of these strong players, I can actually do this, I think he's going to be more confident about acting on that set of knowledge that he has. And if he's able to do that successfully, then he's probably not going to be able to be stopped.
Okay, well, what I was saying about Ian being the biggest beneficiary of the coaches coming in is I think now he's going to get some downtime where he's really not going to have to worry for a while for the reasons we've been saying. And, of course, a very natural comparison, one that's been made since even before the season started, was to Cochran, where I think when we talked to Cochran, he told us it was really, really hard for him right at the beginning just because he felt outcast. And then that never really even changed up until he got to the merge with Upolu, where throughout the entirety of the game, everyone on Sabahi was kind of just beating him down and making him feel unwanted. And Ian kind of got that at first in the beginning and was kind of, at least as depicted on the show and probably in real life, had a bit of a hard time fitting in the beginning. But I think now he's gotten a very nice cushion and is finding his center. And I think by the time he gets to the end game, he's going to have what I think is a very critical component for him, which is confidence. I think he's going to go in and be able to convince himself, I know what I'm doing here. I can execute here. And I think you're right that his knowledge of the game and its fundamentals is going to be critical. And certainly his knowledge of how the end game even plays out in Big Brother, I think, is more than most people even understand.
So a question I have for you is, what do you think is going through Dr. Will's mind when he made that pick? Because it seems to me Dr. Will sees himself as above Big Brother. Like, even when he was participating on it, doing Big Brother 2, doing Big Brother All-Stars, it seemed like this was just something which he was doing for fun. He didn't really take it all that seriously. It seems to me like this is the kind of thing that he would say as a kind of cryptic prediction in order to make people think, well, what are we missing here about this kid Ian, who just seems to be this socially awkward recluse? This is a very Dr. Will thing to do. Story chase out, as you would say.
I also don't think it's a crazy prediction by any means, though. I think Ian, even because he made this prediction when there were still coaches coaching, I think there were a number of contributing factors. One, Ian is not viewed as a threat at all, which, of course, Dr. Will is a big advocate, as any sane player is. You don't want to be viewed as a big threat. Two, he's on his buddy Mike Boogie's team, which, and I'm sure they told Will, oh, hey, by the way, Mike Boogie's going to be getting to enter as a player. We're going to be calling you later. And three, Ian's position is, as we keep harping on, no one's going to target him, which is exactly where you want to be. But he also has the knowledge to take advantage of that situation, because there's a fine line between you're going to be a target whether you know what you're doing or not, which is like the strong players like both Hardy, and then also players like Brendan, and not that Hardy's some genius, but like Dan, where he's a physical competitor and he also knows what he's doing, and then also dumb people who are also physical competitors are going to get targeted. And so where you want to be is not the target, but do know what you're doing, which is not what we saw. I think Ian is someone where we're going to see that, a very good combination of that.
I think the genius of the Ian pick is that people who watch the show uncritically are just going to think, oh, wow, Dr. Will says Ian's going to win, so Ian's going to win. Great, believe Dr. Will. Whereas people who think about the game and like toss around all these hypothetical situations in their head, for them, The Ian pick, it's just plausible enough that they can come up with this crazy fan fiction where Ian like subtly masterminds his way to the end and wins the game, and that doesn't start alarm bells ringing in their head that okay, this is just a crazy thing to be thinking about.
Yeah, but I feel like I don't think it's that crazy of a thing in the first place. I feel like we both probably would have arrived at very similar conclusions anyway.
Yeah, my worry for Ian is one of the things that people who have met Big Brother and Survivor winners always say is that all of them, you know, without exception, have this kind of quality about them where they're just very easy around people. Like, they get along well with people. You know, when you meet them for the first time, you can tell this is the type of person who could have won Big Brother. Everything else aside, I don't think you can say that sort of thing about Ian. He doesn't have that ease socially that you need in order to convince people to vote for you.
Would you say that about Lisa or Maggie or Evil Dick?
I might say that about Maggie. I think Lisa was fantastic socially. I might say that about Evil Dick, but again,
Evil Dick, you know what you're getting real quickly.
Evil Dick has this kind of charisma, right, where even if you don't like the guy, it still kind of draws you in.
Howard Stern, kind of, where however you feel about him, you're at least tuning in.
Yeah, I don't think Ian has that.
No, I certainly don't think Ian is the, like, when you meet Will Kirby, or every time that Will Kirby's on camera, I mean, he brings it. Like we said when we saw him, when we were talking about his, you know, minute and a half clip, we said he's already eclipsed everything these people have done all season in the diary room, because he is that kind of guy. And Ian, no, I don't think is, I mean, Will Kirby is, there are not many people like Will Kirby.
Yeah. The archetypal example of what I'm saying about Ian is what we mentioned earlier, which is his infatuation with Ashley. Okay, in theory, it's possible that there's this guy who is just perfectly normal socially around most people, but awkward around women or something like that. But in general, if they're awkward socially in one area, they're going to be awkward overall. And I think that's true of Ian, where his weird qualities might be endearing to a degree, but when you have to live with him for 90 days, that's like you're not going to end up liking him because of that after that happens.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I think the key for Ian is he's in a very, I think he's in an excellent position. But he is, that said, going to have to start making some changes. And I think he is going to have to kind of lay low, just really start thinking to himself every conversation he's in, what should I be saying rather than what do I want to say? And I think above all, he's going to have to start learning how to lie to people. Because if that conversation with Brittany is any example, he's not going to do that great.
Yes.
But someone, I think, if you put Dan as an unknown right now in Ian's position, Dan has even more equity than current Dan as a coach has.
But does it make sense to say if you put Dan in Ian's position? If Dan was in Ian's position at the beginning of the game, then Ian's position or Dan's position, whatever you want to call it, would not be the same as it is now.
All right, well, for 2.5 hours into this thing, this is way too theoretical for me at this point. But yeah, no, I know, yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. So, anything else we want to talk about today, Dom?
In an attempt to have a less abrupt ending than last time, I don't think we have anything else to talk about. Just to remind you of what we've got coming up, we've got the Breaking Bad podcast coming to you sometime early next week, and then a Breaking Bad season review with Stephen Fishback in about a month or so after the season ends. We're going to be discussing other TV shows as part of that podcast, I think, as a kind of addendum at the end. But
okay.
Breaking Bad is going to be the main focus. And we've contacted some guests to come on and talk about Big Brother and various other things. Yeah, we're not going to act as if that's booked before we know whether that's going to go ahead or not, but that's in the works. So hopefully we can get that and you'll enjoy that. But until next time, unless there's anything else we want to mention, I think that's about it.
No, I'm good. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next week.